and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack.
And Sean Chapman.
Here for the third day in a row.
Yep.
To talk about E3 2018.
3E3.
Yes.
The third E3 podcast.
Third E3 podcast. Last E3 podcast for now, because we're not actually in California on the E3 show floor.
No.
So there's nothing really more for us to say on it after today.
No, obviously, yeah. Like, little bits of news, because now the show floor has opened up for people at the show, so people will have hands-on demos with a lot of these games and stuff. So
yes.
more little trickles of information will come out, but the major stuff is done.
The major stuff is done. It finished today with Nintendo, had the final show.
Some might argue that the major stuff was done yesterday.
I think you're too dismissive of Smash Brothers, okay. But that's okay. Yes, Nintendo had their show. It was not a big show. Nintendo, it has kind of a weird relationship with E3 to begin with.
Yeah.
And clearly they were just here to show off Smash Brothers. They had a couple of announcements. Some of them were big. There was a new Fire Emblem game announced. That's not nothing.
Even like the other announcements that were like that Fire Emblem one, they never spend any time on. Like
no,
they did a trailer, but then yeah. They kind of just moved.
It was definitely the Smash Brothers show,
yeah.
And I was happy because I love Smash Brothers, and this game is kind of it looks kind of cool to me. But we'll get into that. So we have Nintendo. We have final wrap up thoughts. We're gonna do some of that.
I made some lists.
So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah,
yeah. So before we jump into Nintendo, Sean,
Can
we take a trip back to Sean's beta corner for a second?
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Sean's beta corner. Hey,
I didn't know that we were doing this.
Since
it's my segment.
I know, but Sean, hey, how's it going in your beta corner?
It's great, Jonathan. Welcome in. This is my beta corner. We check out the latest and greatest in the hot world of video game betas. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, I just wonder if we could hang out and talk about the Hitman Sniper Assassin
okay,
thing.
Okay, sure, yeah.
You talked about it on Monday in your beta corner.
Yep.
But now I've played it, so I want to come down to your beta corner and talk about Hitman Sniper Assassin.
How's it been?
I played an hour of it just now.
It's good, huh?
Yeah, I've played about 2 hours probably in total, which is silly because it's just one thing where you don't literally move. You just have a sniper rifle.
Uh-huh.
But it's so good.
It really is, right?
Yes. So for people who weren't here with us on Monday or don't know, if you pre-order Hitman 2, you can just do it on Amazon and then cancel right away because they just send you the code.
Uh-huh.
You get the code, you put it on your PS4, your Xbox One, PC, wherever, and you download this. It's like 6 gigs because everything's way too big now. And it is, you are Agent 47 looking down at a mansion where a wedding is going on, and you have 3 targets you have to kill plus 15 bodyguards who are semi-optional, depending on how you do it. And you just gotta snipe those motherfuckers. And if that sounds like, oh, that sounds kind of simple, it both is and it isn't because it's Hitman.
Yeah, exactly. It very much is like replicates some of the stuff that Hitman is of like you can just snipe the people and move on and it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Or you could do a bunch of silly shit like shooting people's bodies into like the water and doing,
right.
Like I remember just spending like an absurd amount of time trying to just nudge this body into this one little bush because it's like, I want to get the one for hiding all the bodies. I want to get that challenge.
I know. I've been working on that. I don't have that challenge done yet. I did just finish the one for getting all headshots.
Nice.
Which was fun. But I've come close on the hiding the bodies one. But it is when I realize that you could hide the bodies by, after death, shooting them into the hidden area.
Yeah.
That was kind of amazing.
It's very good. It's a game changer.
It's a game changer, definitely. But it is really fun. One, the sniping controls are just very refined and fun to play.
Yeah.
Like, they did a really interesting thing where, like, most sniping games have the thing where you can, like, hold down the button and, like, you slow your breath and so it, like, becomes easier to manage. But usually that's on a stick or something. The way it's controlled in Hitman is you hold down the R trigger a little bit.
Right,
and it slows down. And then if you pull it all the way, you'll fire. It's very intuitive once I realized that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And playing that way and just, like, it really is like one of the Hitman maps where it is this like little clockwork diorama thing moving around where when you start to realize the enemy patterns and where people are and what all the possibilities are, and I'm sure I've only scratched the surface because there's a whole thing about electrocuting people that I haven't figured out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing when you start to look at all the different things you can do. And this is without moving and interacting with any of it. This is just having a sniper rifle and looking down on everything. And it's so fun and it feels so fully fleshed out. I hope that is a major mode in Hitman 2.
I mean, I have to assume that it's going to be. Like that, because obviously this is just on the one map that for this like weird pre-order version of it. But yeah, it is something that, like I said when we talked about it on my beta corner section, it is such a smart way of taking these mechanics that they built for Hitman 1 with sniping, but that game, like, there are sniping challenges, and it's a fun way to do that game, and, you know, you can do it, but it's pretty limited because of the nature of kind of, like, what sniping in a game like that is when you only have two targets, right?
Yeah.
So instead taking those mechanics out, and, well, not out, like, obviously, when you play the full game, I assume you'll be able to do all that shit in the map normally, but also sort of, like, polishing it up and making a mode that sort of features that mechanic in the game is really cool.
It's really cool, and it feels like something where if they had one of these for every map, that would be just such a fun little bonus, because it is really... They've reoriented the basic mechanics of the game enough to fit sniping that it doesn't feel like a thing you would do 10 items down on the challenge list, but a fun way to play the game.
Yeah, and just, like, see the maps and the way the characters move around the map from, like, a different perspective.
Yes. Yeah, also, cool. That map is so cool, and I can't wait to play on it, because I kept seeing all these places where, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna hide a body there.
Yeah, because it is especially a very smart thing to do for this, like, weird little pre-release thing.
Yeah.
Because you only see that one side of the map. It's like, you can kind of see through the windows and the mansion. You're like, oh, there's some shit in there.
Yes.
I'm going to be able to do some shit in there.
This is honestly, like, one of the best pre-order bonus things I've ever seen in terms of just, like, a pre-game demo, because it's not like, here, help us stress test our network.
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, they might be doing a little bit of that with the online stuff, but I don't know. It's not, you know, just here's a random level. It really does feel like this is something different to kind of entice you with, like, here's how Hitman has maybe evolved on the road to Hitman 2.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Also, the game looks fucking beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hitman was a good-looking game. This, there's just an extra level of vibrancy to it.
Yeah, I agree.
That I noticed. So, really cool. You should definitely check that out. Really, they should just make it like an open demo in the shop and not make you go through the deal of pre-ordering it. But that's how they do it. And, you know, there's plenty of ways to pre-order without spending a single dime. So, it's great. Hitman 2 is awesome. And that can do it for now for Sean's Beta Corner.
Ba-ba-da-ba-ba.
All right, let's head out of the Beta Corner and go back to the podcast studio.
Okay, here we go. All right. Clock, clock, clock. Okay, we're sitting down. All right,
we're here.
Oh, man, that was a long walk.
All right. So, Sean, today we had a Nintendo show, and this is a weird one, because while I'm the Nintendo fan here, obviously.
Yeah.
I am very stoked about everything they said about Smash Brothers. It was, I think if you like Smash Brothers, that was just a little love letter to you and all the stuff they showed. But I don't think the show was very good.
No. Yeah. As someone who doesn't own a Nintendo Switch, but is, like, willing to be courted, like, I want to play Super Mario Odyssey and stuff. I really want to play this Fire Emblem game. I am in a space where it's like, I might purchase a Nintendo Switch at some point in the future. This show did almost nothing for me, especially when they got into the Smash Bros. Stuff where I enjoyed Smash Bros. Melee a lot. And then I didn't like Brawl that much. And then when I've been at friends' houses and played some Smash Bros. 4, which I haven't done that much, but a couple of times I've done that. And it's like, I enjoyed it, but not enough to like be like, oh, I'm going to get back onto Smash Brothers. This did nothing for me.
No, and I understand.
Honestly, it just kind of pushed me away because they went so deep in the fucking woods on Smash Brothers that they didn't like pitch it to anybody other than the people who are, like, super hardcore into Smash Brothers.
And it is weird, because it's not like Nintendo doesn't have the lineup for everyone else.
Yeah.
It's not like they had to go this deep on Smash Brothers, because this has been their strategy 2 years in a row. They had Zelda 2 years ago, and they had Mario last year, but they didn't go anywhere near as deep on the main show on Zelda or Mario as they did Smash Bros. Today.
Yeah. And they did a better job of, like, pitching those games from, like, a bigger picture perspective, whereas, like, this, they just went into ridiculously minute detail that at some point I tweeted this out after the Nintendo thing, and you gave a very nice response to my tweet, a very informative response to my tweet of, I didn't know if it was a new Smash Brothers game or not, because the way they talked about it made it kind of impossible to know.
It really was. Like, there was some... And actually, the Treehouse afterwards did a better job on some of those big picture messaging things, because it was just Sakurai...
Right.
I mean, somewhat scripted, I'm sure, but, like, you know, more just an interview kind of scenario. And, yeah, it was... It's weird, because Smash Bros. Casts a very wide net. A lot of people like and play Smash Brothers, but no game casts the net that's all you can talk about. You know, like, Sony talked about a very limited range, but if all they had done was Ghost of Tsushima, let's say, we think that game looks fucking rad. Yeah. Not everyone on planet Earth is going to be sold on that.
But then also, like, you know, this is the fifth Smash Brothers yes. game, so it's not, like, at least Ghost of Tsushima, if they just did a super deep dive in that, it's a new game.
It is.
This would be like if they showed Call of Duty at E3 the way they show Call of Duty at their own press events.
Yeah.
That's just like, we're going to talk about, like, the weird, like, how we've changed, like, the rate of health regeneration or something.
Yeah.
Which, if you're super deep into that franchise, that's meaningful to you. But E3 is your opportunity to market and, like, position yourself for other people that, like, I don't watch most Nintendo Directs. I was watching this one because it's the E3 one, and I'm expecting kind of messaging, you know?
And this was not as good or well put together as the Nintendo Directs of even, like, earlier this year, the one where they, at the end, unveiled Smash Bros. Remember
one?
Yeah, they had a lot of other good stuff in that, and surprise, like the Splatoon 2 Octo expansion and things, where they just, they had enough, like, balls in the air. And this one had very few balls in the air. It had mostly Smash balls at the end, and a couple of little things early on. And there were some cool teases, but again, like, I almost, and I, who knows if this was even possible with some of these games, but, like, it feels like this would have been a good, I think Nintendo and Sony are actually pretty close in how they approach these things.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. Like, philosophically, which is show the games in depth.
Yeah.
But I think Nintendo, it would have behooved them to do, like, an hour, and this is the only E3 one where I'm asking the show to be longer. But, like, have Smash Bros. As one pillar, maybe show that Fire Emblem in a little more depth as another pillar.
Yeah, because if it's coming out spring 2019, it has to be far enough along that you can show more of it.
Yeah. The mecha thing at the beginning was super cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to see some actual gameplay from that. Like, even if everyone's annoyed with Mario Tennis Aces, and it is coming out very soon, but I don't know, you could have done more on that.
You could have spent a lot more time on Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked at how quick that section was.
I was too, and the treehouse again afterwards, I kept watching, because that's actually where I got some of the details. I watched the E3 thing because I'm expecting to get, you know? Like, there were some things I wanted to see, and I saw them afterwards in the treehouse thing. So, yeah, it was weird. There were also, like, some significant things that we thought were going to be there that were missing. I don't mean, like, Metroid Prime 4. That doesn't surprise me. That's a next year game.
Yeah.
But not a peep about the online service.
Nope.
Which, again, like Sony, Nintendo does not generally talk about services or hardware on their shows, but still kind of conspicuous that they didn't even mention it with a significant online game coming out in December. Yoshi for Switch was not just a complete no-show here. It's not on the stage floor.
It's not coming out in 2018. I was right
probably
about that.
Probably not. Probably not. It's strange. There's two things that could have happened to that game.
Yeah.
One, it's just taking longer than expected and they're working on it. Or it's done. It's in a vault somewhere and Nintendo is just saving it for a rainy day.
Sure.
Which, knowing Nintendo, is 100% possible.
Yeah.
They do that. But it is weird that that didn't show up, because it also means that, looking at their schedule, they do have a pretty glaring hole, like, August, September.
Yeah.
Whereas June is Mario Tennis, July is Octopath Traveler, Captain Toad, some other things. I don't think they have anything coming out August for the Switch. I don't think September. October is Mario Party. November is Pokemon. December is Smash Bros.
Yeah.
But since the Switch came out, they've had a pretty clear pattern of every month has at least one major exclusive or first-party title that is kind of anchored, the month is anchored around that. And so there is an obvious hole. I expect that hole will be filled, because Nintendo doesn't so much care about E3 the way everyone else does in terms of, I mean, everyone's getting away from it a little bit, but, like, they don't need to anchor it around that. They could do a Nintendo Direct at the end of July and announce the Yoshi game is coming out in September, and here's it is, and it's fully featured, and it's been done for 6 months. That could also happen. It would be weird that they didn't announce it here.
Yeah, but, because, again, this is, because your Nintendo Directs are ones that are, those are mostly only being watched by people who are way into Nintendo.
Yeah.
E3 is your, that's, like, the one thing that E3 has value for. It is your opportunity to get a bigger message out there that other, like, lots of people watch, like, E3 streams that are hosted, because every fucking video game affiliated channel does, like, you know, live streams of the conferences that they talk over and stuff. Lots of people watch these conferences and these videos that are not normally watching these kinds of, like, press things.
Yeah.
So it is their opportunity to talk about that stuff. And so, yeah, there was no Yoshi. There's no talk of the, like, rumored Retro game. Well, like, I mean, Retro is definitely working on something. Whether it's that Star Fox Grand Prix.
That was also Star Fox Grand Prix, because I thought for sure we were going to see that.
Yeah. Especially after Star Fox being on the Ubisoft stage.
Yeah.
Felt like it was like, they're going to show more.
Because that could also be the September game, but we don't know.
No Metroid Prime 4. which isn't a huge surprise, but it is, like, weird not to mention it at all when it was announced last year. There's no... Obviously, like, this makes sense because they have that Pokemon Go thing, but there's no, of, like, the next big Pokemon. They didn't talk about that at all. There was no Animal Crossing, which, you know, that hasn't been teased or anything, but it's a big sort of like, oh, they haven't moved that to the Switch yet. No Bayonetta 3, which has been announced for Switch, and that was not talked about at all. And most disastrously, no Goku.
No Goku.
I mean, they did show Dragon Ball FighterZ, but no Goku in Smash Brothers.
Yes. So, we'll have to wait another day for Goku in Smash Brothers. This game's going to have DLC too, I assume, so who knows?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, kind of weird that the show was like this. It's not one of those cases where you look at it doom and gloom like Nintendo's in trouble. They just had a weird show.
Yeah, it's just, but it's sort of like head scratching of I don't understand why the show was like this.
I do think, because this E3 felt like kind of one of extremes.
Uh-huh.
Of like,
yes, definitely.
EA had nothing, just complete waste of time. Ubisoft didn't have much. Their show didn't feel like a waste of time because they put effort into it, but it was conspicuous, the lack of new stuff. Sony and Microsoft didn't necessarily have a bunch of big revelations, but they did have, like, a ton of things to show, big material. Bethesda decided to just drop 5 mics on the stage.
Uh-huh.
So I do wonder if, like, I feel like Sony, Microsoft, and Bethesda might all go in the camp of they probably all looked at the competition and thought they're not going to have much to show, so let's really load up. And Nintendo, Ubisoft, and EA and Square
doesn't count. Was technically there.
They all might have looked at the competition and said they don't have much, so let's just play it safe.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That kind of feels like Nintendo might have just thought, who else is going to... What's this Death Stranding thing? Fuck it. We have Smash Bros. That's going to win the week. And the week wound up being so big for some areas that, like, Smash Bros. Is big, and I think I have seen a lot of chatter and people are happy about it, but it's not breaking out the way Ghost of Tsushima did last night.
Yeah, it feels really... The Smash Bros. Reception is incredibly insular from what I've seen. Of, like, if people are really into Smash Bros., they loved what they saw. Anybody that has... Like, anybody who missed any Smash Bros. Game doesn't give a fuck. If you missed one of them, it's like... It's like, I can't even approach this, because I didn't remember and I didn't know that, like, a bunch of those characters were not in the last Smash Brothers game. I just assumed, I guess they cut out the Ice Climbers at some point, weren't there. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that when we get to it. But, it's... The thing is, the way they showed Smash Brothers, I enjoyed all of it because I am in that target audience they were going for. But it felt like the kind of Nintendo Direct they would give on a non-E3 day where it's like, we're going to do our Smash Direct. And that's what you expect. And if you're into Smash, you show up and it's perfect, right?
Uh-huh.
I feel like there was probably a different way to pitch Smash today with some of those same messages, like it's got, because the main message is like, this is the most complete, definitive Smash Brothers you could ever have.
Yeah.
But they showed that on a much more kind of, as you say, insular, like, let's really pitch it to the hardcore Smash fans. And again, it's not that I think they're going to like, the game's going to flop now because they did that. It's just weird messaging at
E3. Yeah. Because they spent 25 minutes on Smash Brothers. 25 minutes. I would just earlier today was rewatching a bunch of the Sony gameplay demos because I found good like high definition images that I could download. And I think the longest one of those was the Last of Us 2 one, which was 10 minutes.
Yes.
The other ones were like 8 minutes.
I love
and they showed a lot more interesting about all of those other games than anything they showed about Smash Brothers to me.
I love Smash Bros. I even started to feel the pinch a little bit, and it was also like I did see some people tweeting about this who are not into Smash Bros. And it's like, this is how I felt during The Division or something, isn't it?
Yes, that it is 100% that. Because The Division ones were actually kind of similar of all the shit they showed about The Division 2 in terms of gameplay was all stuff that's like, we have specializations you unlock at level 30. That's like, I don't give a shit. I played the beta of The Division 1 and didn't really like it much. I'm not, like, you can't pitch me on, wow, I'm going to enjoy this game once I get to level 30. Yeah. That's kind of what Smash Bros. Felt like.
All right, you want to talk about the show?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you take the lead.
I'm going to take the lead on this one. It's fun.
Because you're the Nintendo man.
I did take some notes. So let's see. We started with a bunch of giant robots. Very colorful, very stylized. Looks like a 3D mecha anime. And it is called Daemon X Machina, or Daemon X Machina, coming 2018 for Switch. They said, or did they say
2019?
Oh, typo. Yeah. 2019. Looked really cool.
Looks fucking awesome.
Didn't have a ton of details about it. After the show, they revealed who the developer and everything was. Let me see if
Marvelous,
I can find that again.
I think is the developer.
I believe you're correct. I'm just going to go look at it again. Vamp for a second.
It's marvelous is the number.
Yeah. So what else have they done?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
I'm going to look at that. But yeah, the thing I loved about that trailer is it was very... I'm just going to say that the mech designs were ripoffs of Gundam, but it was very Gundam-inspired.
Yes.
And the tone of it was just like, it was fucking straight-up heavy metal playing and all that shit. And it, yeah, it was cool. They do like a bunch of like sort of handheld games. They did a bunch of Vita games, like the Fate Zero, like Fate Extra, Fate Extella spin-offs and stuff.
I have from the website.
Soul Sacrifice.
Yes, the website says a brand new fast-paced mech action game from Kenichiro Tsukuda is coming to Nintendo Switch system. Take your arsenal of fully customizable powered suit out for an array of missions to surmount the enemy at all costs, blah, blah, blah. Tsukuda is well known for his work developing the Armored Core series. They want to make the best mech action game out there. The character designs were by Yusuke Kozaki, who also worked on Fire Emblem Awakening and Fire Emblem Fates. Mech concept designs were by Mr. Kawamori, who worked on the Armored Core series and Super Dimension Fortress Macross.
Yeah.
And arsenals can battle freely in the air and on the ground. So this sounds cool. And if you haven't looked at the trailer or the art, it is super neat looking.
Yeah, it's very striking.
Very striking, very stylized, really gorgeous, you know, built from the ground up for Switch. So, looks like a really cool game.
Did they confirm that it's Switch exclusive? It was not clear to me. Because since nobody said anything about the video game, it was unclear to me.
I believe it is, because it's got a, like, Nintendo homepage.
Okay.
And it's only up for pre-order on Switch, so I assume it's a Switch exclusive. But yeah, maybe I shouldn't assume. It does seem like it is.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing of that it's hard to, compared to if something's shown on like EA or Ubisoft, you can always tell by the logos at the end of the trailer.
Yes.
But nobody's going to put a Sony logo on a Nintendo trailer.
No. So anyway, either way, however it comes out, that was great. And it was one I kind of wanted more about because it was like they went by it and I'm like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Show us more of that. Either way, cool announcement. So feather in the cap. Then we had another Japanese trailer. I wrote, Japanese trailer for another very Japanese-looking game.
Yes.
Xenoblade something? And it is. It's Xenoblade Chronicles 2 DLC. It's called Torna the Golden Country. It's September 2018. This will have a retail release. It's just a download code in a box, but I guess you can play the DLC separate from the main game. You don't have to own Xenoblade Chronicles 2. It was kind of confusing, so I hope I got that right. But yes, it's coming out. People who like Xenoblade very, very much, and good on ya. I tried it, and I couldn't quite get into it, but that's okay. This DLC looked good.
I could tell that it was Xenoblade before they did the title drop because they changed all the proper nouns of the translation.
Yes.
It must be Xenoblade.
Yes. That's kind of an annoying translation. All right, then Reggie was up, talking about the vision for the Switch. He says, where will Nintendo Switch take you next? To a smashing invitational, or on a timeless journey through Viridian cities? Ha ha ha. Reggie with the puns. Reggie's puns are great because he's so fucking straight-faced when he does it. Anyway.
There was something I do want to, like, cause for some of, like, the live-action bits, I kind of missed when Nintendo would, on their E3 ones, have kind of a bit more pomp and circumstance to, and, like, have, like, their weird, like, puppet skits and stuff like that. It was weirdly low energy. Like, I felt like, it felt like Reggie had just woken up before they recorded.
Because
he's just, like, you know, he was fine. He's Reggie. I like Reggie. But it did have a certain, like, compared to their other E3 shows that had usually a lot of energy and a lot of presenters, it was kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
It kind of like set the tone for not to expect that much once it got down to it.
Yes. So anyway, but Reggie was there to show off Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, talked about the Pokeball Plus, announced that Mew comes exclusive with every Pokeball Plus. So if you want Mew in the game, you get the Pokeball Plus, which is the little Pokeball controller, and Mew is in there for you.
Yeah, that Pokeball controller looked fucking tiny next to Reggie. When Reggie was holding it, it was like he was like palming it with like just by squeezing his hand a little bit.
I am super curious the size of it because this was not announced, which is weird, but like it was on the website afterward, and I have pre-ordered this. There is a bundle you can get. It's currently up at Best Buy. By the time you hear this, Amazon will probably have it. It's $100, and you get the game and the Pokeball controller. So little savings there, especially if you have, like, the Gamers Club Unlocked stuff. You get the 20% off, which you would not get on the controller itself. So that's nice. So I went ahead and pre-ordered it, because I am interested in this, and I'm super curious about that Pokeball Plus, mostly because I do want to know how actually, like, big or small it is.
It looked,
looks tiny.
It looked very small next to Reggie, because Reggie is a large guy.
He is.
There was, like, a sort of normal-sized human person in the trailer that was holding it, and it looked, obviously, like, nowhere near the size of, like, a normal Pokeball from, like, the show.
Right.
But it looked like a decent-sized thing for, yes, like, a dumb video game add-on.
Yeah, so I'm curious about it. Looks fun. I'm actually looking forward to this game. I'll just go ahead and talk about the Treehouse stuff,
too. Yeah, because I did not see that, so I don't know what they showed.
I didn't watch the whole thing, because I assume it went on for a very long time, but they were showing off a part of it in Viridian Forest, so early in the game, in Kanto, where you go
to
the
forest. So it is all, like, the Kanto, like, red-blue stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
And that was cool. I mean, that's one of the coolest things, just looking at the trailers, is to see the red-blue stuff in, you know, full console 3D.
I mean, it's the only good Pokemon.
It's not the only good Pokemon, but...
It's not true, but I like saying it.
Okay. Anyway, but yes, it looked cool. They talked a little bit more about... They were interviewing Masuda, the Pokemon director, about, like, the philosophy behind it and everything. They also showed off some more gameplay details. Like, I have been wondering since the analysis, how does experience work? How do you level up your Pokemon if you don't fight wild Pokemon?
Right, yes.
And how it works is when you catch a Pokemon, you do get EXP. So, you get EXP for catching Pokemon, you also obviously get EXP for battling with trainers, but they have not just stripped that out entirely.
Okay.
You get EXP, and it also just applies evenly across your whole party for everything, which they've been moving towards with the experience share stuff in the last couple games, but yes, now it is just, your party gets experience, you level up, and then the battle screen is a very familiar Pokemon battle screen. You've got your four moves, you level up, you get new moves. I am curious to see what other depth might be thrown into it. Like, it does look like there's different ways you have to, like, throw the Pokeballs as it gets harder, and, like, motions and stuff, to catch them. And there's different, like, berries you can throw and stuff. I do not know Pokemon Go, so I don't know what is and isn't from that game. But it looked interesting. I still think this game could be pretty cool, in just in the sense of Pokemon is a 22-year-old franchise at this point.
Yeah.
So if they want to shake things up a little bit, I'm fine with that, especially knowing that they have, like, the next big one coming out next year.
It would be nice if they wanted to shake things up to shake things up in the main games.
Yes, it would. It would. I mean, they have been. But Sun and Moon are pretty radically different. But, they don't have gyms. So, you know, there's that. But we'll see.
You mean, like, gyms that you go to work out, or gyms like people named a gym? There are no people named Jim.
Neither, surprisingly.
Fuck.
The gyms were my favorite trainers. Young trainer Jim.
Yep. Hot. Anti-gym stance from Nintendo across the board.
All right. But that was Pokemon. It's all coming out November 16th, but we already knew that. Then we did have another announcement.
Yep.
Mario Party time. Super Mario Party for Switch. So this is effectively Mario Party 11, but they're not calling it that.
Because that's way too high of a number, and you scare everybody away when you call something 11.
I mean, they got pretty far on 1 through 10. Most games do not make it that far numbered.
Like, I feel like normal people stopped paying attention to Mario Party after, like, 4 or 5.
Yeah, they did, of course. But yes, I just think it's funny. So Super Mario Party, the commercial really focused on the social aspect, bringing it around, playing with friends. There's a mode where you can line multiple Switches up to make, like, a bigger screen, which was kind of interesting. But what's exciting, if you have any affection for Mario Party, is this looked like a real Mario Party game.
Yeah, it's not like the weird ones where you're all in a car or whatever that they've been doing.
That was Mario Party 9 and 10. 9 for the Wii and 10 for the Wii U, which I've never played 10, but I tried 9, and they're both fucking horrible because there's nothing involved to it. You just roll the dice, but everyone does it together, and then you move together, and there's no competitive aspect whatsoever. And this is another one where I went to the website to look up extra details, because it does have a web page, and there are more details here. It is an actual game board, players roll separately, bunch of fun mini games, so the basic Mario Party stuff. They specifically outlined, like, we've added more strategy to the game. And what that means is that
they added strategy to the game where it did not exist before.
Yeah, so a little more, like, each character actually has different, like, for lack of a better term, stats. Like, they have different strengths and weaknesses on the game board. So each one has a different dice.
So, like, Toad goes really fast, but Bowser's really heavy, and he can kind of plow through people.
Probably something like that. But yeah, like Mario has a 1-6 dice, but someone else had a 1-10 dice. But I assume there are also restrictions on that. So they don't have all the details on that, but it looked cool. They had a bunch of screenshots, and the UI looks very nice, more developed than some of the other recent ones. And just looks like what you would actually want from a Mario Party sequel if you last played like 5 on the GameCube.
Yeah.
And it's been not just stagnant, but devolving since then. This looks like they're picking up where they left off 15 years ago. So that's nice. Kind of very similar to Mario Tennis that's about to come out.
Right, yeah.
Where the Mario Sports games, people have been really down on forever. And the reason I'm excited for Tennis is that the people who like Mario Sports are really excited for it.
Yes, yeah.
Because they're all saying, like, this is what we've wanted. So it looks like this one for Mario Party is doing that. It's coming out October 5th, 2018. And, yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, I think that's smart for them. It's time to bring that back. I'm not a big Mario Party person because I'm not 6 years old anymore. And I don't like games that are just random bullshit like Monopoly and Mario Party. But, you know, there's a time and a place for that. They should bring that back. That's smart.
Yes, and I think it is also, like, so perfect for the Switch specifically.
Yes, yeah, that's a
good
point.
It'd be weird if the Nintendo Switch did not have a good Mario Party on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You can throw your fucking, like, Joy-Con in someone's eyes. Like, yes, exactly. Fuck this shit.
Yes.
This is bullshit. They just gave you all my stars for no reason. Fuck you.
It's what's fun. All right. Another Japanese-ass trailer with Japanese-ass anime cutscenes I wrote. And this is Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yep.
This is the Switch Fire Emblem. The full, you know, basically console Fire Emblem. We have not had a console Fire Emblem since Radiant Dawn on the Wii, so we have never had an HD Fire Emblem. It looks very much kind of like the 3DS games in terms of the basic design, but like much, much bigger. So one of the things they showed off is the thing where it goes from the, you know, tactical field to combat seamlessly.
Yeah.
The 3DS games did that, but obviously with much less panache because they couldn't. So this one, like, there's that amazing shot where you're on the field and it's very detailed and looks really nice, and then you go in and it's like two full armies coming at each other.
Yeah, that was the part that looked really cool, of that they sort of like drew in all these soldiers, so it feels more like an actual, like, battle instead of just a couple of people on a field, like running up, hitting them, and then stepping away for a little bit.
Which is wonderful in its own way.
Yeah, but it works well on the very abstract representation of, like, a Game Boy or a Nintendo DS, but I had never thought about, oh shit, like, of course it would look like this if you had a, like, proper console to do it on.
Yep. Almost looks like they brought in some assets from Fire Emblem Warriors, the Musou game,
sure,
a little bit.
I can see that.
It was cool. They had big 3D environments for you to, like, run through and walk around as well, which Fire Emblem's never had, but that actually seems like a good evolution. The last one, Fire Emblem Echoes, which was the remake of the NES one but had a lot of new stuff, has parts where you, like, explore environments, but it's all this kind of abstract first-person thing. So that seems neat. Just a big scale. The anime cutscenes were gorgeous, as they have been for the 3DS ones as well, but on a 3DS screen, they're, you know, in, like, 360p. So this looked really nice. The music was beautiful. It already had English voice acting, so it seems like they're localizing this simultaneously.
Yeah.
Was the indication, because they just said spring 2019. They didn't break out, like, Japan and America. And all the recent Fire Emblems, Echoes might have actually broken this trend, but I know all the way through Fates, there was a gap between Japan and America, so it seems like they're just full-on doing a worldwide launch for this one. So that's neat. But yeah, I'm very excited. It's, you know, an all-new story, obviously, just a new Fire Emblem world. The title is kind of... I like the title, Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a very Fire Emblem title. But yes, I like it. I'm very excited.
Curse on all three of your houses.
Yes. So that's going to be great. Rumors that that might be a this year game, but it is not. It is a next year game, which is fine. There's too many games this year anyway.
Makes sense. I feel like we would have heard about it beforehand if it was going to come out this year.
All right. Then they showed off Fortnite for Switch. You can download that free today.
Reggie lied to us and said that he's ever played Fortnite, which that's never happened. Reggie Fils-Aimé has never played Fortnite. That has not happened.
Probably not. No. So, yeah, I still don't really know what Fortnite is, but I guess I
already blew my 14 days joke, so I can't do it again.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out now, but probably not.
They had a bunch of teens in that trailer playing it in the school cafeteria.
Are you allowed to play?
Get the fuck out of here, you goddamn. Go to class, assholes. Stop playing your fucking game. It's obnoxious. It's not even that good.
Are you allowed to play Fortnite if you're older than 16?
No, you shouldn't be.
Okay. All right. Reggie then talked up indie games on the Switch.
Yep.
I did notice the Switch on screen behind him had a homepage full of indie games, which was a nice little detail. Then they had two premieres today. Overcooked 2, our first footage of that. That's coming August 7th. Killer Queen Black, which is a pixel art game from Liquid Bit.
Yeah, I misspelled that. An arcade kind of game. I think Killer Queen was an arcade game from, like, the early 2010s. that this is like a redone version of that.
They even said rebuilt from the ground up. It's not a Switch exclusive, but it is a Switch console launch exclusive, to borrow a little Microsoft parlance.
They should have just gotten the Microsoft guy that says console launch exclusive.
Yes. Then they showed off Hollow Knight, which is in no way a Switch exclusive.
No, but it's already out on like PC, right?
But is a big, cool, stylish platformer available today. And I did look at the reaction, and apparently a lot of people have been asking for this on Switch. So that went over well with people, and it's already out. So go get it if you want it.
This also, like, a lot of the stuff was stuff that was in that one leak, right?
Yes.
Of the, like, weird pamphlet. So it seems like that pamphlet was pretty legit.
Yep, especially with the next part. Because then Reggie reminded us about Octopath Traveler.
Because nobody saw that Square Enix thing, so I guess we have to talk about it here for a second.
There's a new demo for that coming June 14th. There already had been an Octopath Traveler demo, but this is the second demo. And if you've played, like, this team's demos before, this is the team that did Bravely Default, Bravely Second. They make these, like, very meaty demos that are sometimes, like, more like a prologue to the main game. And your progress does carry over the content you get. So that's pretty neat. And then they had a big video package, and I tried to get all the titles. I think I did, so let's do it fast. Yeah. Starlink Battle for Atlas, Arena of Valor, Minecraft, which is relaunching with the Bedrock update. They didn't explain that, so if you were confused and thought Minecraft is already on Switch,
that's
what it is. It's that new update Microsoft is pushing that is the crossplay one, the one that will never come to PS4 because Sony does not like to share their ball with other people.
Yeah.
So we had that. We had Sushi Striker, which is already out, Mario plus Rabbids Donkey Kong, which we saw the other day, PixArk, Just Dance 2019, Dragon Ball Fighters had no date. I'm surprised they didn't break that one out a little more, but whatever. Yeah. Splatoon 2 Octo Expansion, Captain Toad, Crash Bandicoot, Ninjala, Carcassonne.
Carcassonne. It's like a board game thing.
FIFA 18, FIFA 19, apparently they had to show both of those. Ark Survival Evolved, Wasteland 2, Paladins, Fallout Shelter, Dark Souls Remastered, SNK Heroines, Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, Wolfenstein 2, The World Ends With You, which is still coming fall 2018. Very surprised that didn't get a little bit, because people love that fucking game. Mega Man 11 and Mario Tennis Aces. I feel like there were a lot they could have broken out there. Most of it was just your very standard, like, here's what's coming if you've forgotten.
Yeah.
Everyone does a little bit of that, but... Yeah, it's kind of weird. There's no rhyme or reason for what got thrown in there and what didn't, I feel like.
Yeah, I do like that this is the only place we saw footage of Just Dance 2019.
That's very true.
Here. They did not show any of that game at Ubisoft.
I did think that. I was like, oh, that's what that game looks like.
Yeah.
It's not a dancing panda.
Then I also noticed when they were showing Starlink, they only showed footage that had the Fox and Arwing thing in it, which I thought was like, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know, of course.
All right. Then Shinya Takahashi was up. He talked about how happy he is when he sees people play Switch on the go. And then he threw it over to Masahiro Sakurai for Smash Bros. They started with a fighter roster video, showed off a bunch of characters. Then they started showing characters who have been gone or are new to the series, like the Ice Climbers, the Pokemon Trainer. Snake was the big one, because right after Snake, they said, everyone is here. And I'm like, oh. They mean everyone, because they kept going and they showed pretty much every character who's ever been in Smash Bros. And to recap for you, Sean, and for anyone who has maybe been away from Smash Bros. For a while, so obviously you had your first game on N64, and then Melee had that roster, which was only 10 or 12 characters and built on it. But then Brawl took several of those characters out. Like, Brawl got rid of all the clone characters, like Dr. Mario, it got rid of Pichu, it got rid of... it kept Falco, but it got rid of Young Link, replaced him with Toon Link. So there were all these like different characters who got pulled out. Brawl also introduced like Snake and Sonic and some third-party characters. Then for Smash 4, they changed up the roster again, and Snake was not there this time. They had obviously a bunch of new characters from other third parties. That was mostly in the DLC. They split off characters like Samus and Zero Suit Samus became separate and things like that. But the Smash roster, there had been like additions and subtractions with each game. So the big thing they pushed here, and Sakurai like started his presentation making this clear, is that their goal was to include every fighter in the series history in the game. The starting roster, he explained, is as small as the original N64 game, but then you unlock very fast. He said streamlined conditions for unlocking, so you're constantly unlocking.
In that section, the way it was presented, at first I was like, wait, do you buy like packs of characters or something? Because it's like, at first you start with the original roster of Smash Brothers characters, but then I'm like, oh god. It's like, okay. Nintendo has not gone that far.
Nintendo did not lose their goddamn minds.
Yeah, like there was a moment where it's like, my heart fell into the pit of my stomach, like, what the fuck is, okay, that's fine.
Yes.
I don't know why you announced that here, but okay.
Yep. And then he showed off, he said 8-bit player battles are returning. He showed off a bunch of new changes for the characters, and this is the part that probably went on the longest.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because it's about a half a page of notes for me. I am not going to read all of them off, but let's see.
Some of these are so fucking hilarious that they showed some of this shit.
Yeah. Because there were some obvious ones, like, okay, Cappy is in the game for Mario.
Of course.
You can also use his wedding and builder outfits here. That's awesome. Link has the champion's tunic, and now his bombs are remotely detonated with the Sheikah Slate. Things like that. There were some more minor ones, like, Ike has his outfit from Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn with different voices for the two based on the game.
But then they did, like, when they actually played the two voice clips, they sounded basically identical. By, like, it being, like, two different versions, I think it's literally, like, they had the voice actor do a couple of takes, as you would always do for a line like that,
yeah.
And they just took two of the takes. It's the same line, it's the same basic delivery, it's the same actor. I like when they did that, I was like, what the fuck are you, what are you doing? What is this? Like, yeah. No, I can't tell the difference between these two things. Why are you saying this on E3?
Yes. Some other funny ones. Pikachu, you can now play as female Pikachu, which has a heart-shaped tail.
Yep.
I did not know that. So there you go.
That's sexist.
Fox is based on his Star Fox Zero look.
Sure.
This is also where he started getting really granular with little gameplay changes. And this is what I mean by the kind of stuff that I think fans would go nuts for in, like, a Smash-specific Direct, but is weird to be on the E3 stage.
Yeah, and for someone like me, a lot of these, I didn't know if they were talking about something that was new or not, because, like, half of them, it sounded like, and we have changed the way that this thing is, like, is that different? Like,
well,
or is it new? Did you change it? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, so there's stuff like Samus now you can charge in midair, which you couldn't before.
I did not know that that's something you couldn't do before.
No, couldn't do that. It would stop your charging. Marth's dancing blade is faster now. All the final smashes are more direct and to the point. That actually is a big one, I think.
Yeah, so there's no more, like, transformation final smashes, right?
No, and there's no, like, big cinematics. It's all very fast and just in the, it looked great to me. Let's see. The Pokemon trainer returns with all three fighters. No penalty for sticking with just one, which apparently was a thing before.
Yeah, that's one of those of, like, that was something. Like, that's, I played Brawl. I played that character sometimes. I don't remember that at all.
All the characters who have special gauges, they now are displayed by their name. Like, Robin and Cloud have different ones.
And this is the thing of where half of this shit sounds like it's, like, patch notes. Like, that sounds like that you patched the game. That doesn't sound like a thing you highlight of, oh, we also duplicated this gauge at the bottom of the screen as well. Or we added this extra little gauge. That's like, it's not we changed the mechanic. We added a gauge that clarifies what the mechanic is doing.
Some of that was like that. There were some bigger things. He very proudly at the end explained that there are tens of thousands of changes overall, which of course there are. It's a full new game. But I mean,
my favorite one was when he was like, and we changed the face on the Wii Fit trainer. It's like,
I know. Here's my theory. Well, not only that, my favorite part of that was he said, I wasn't too into it, but the Wii Fit team requested we do it.
It's like who's the Wii Fit team? Are they still a
single? They're unemployed now, but
yeah, like, when the fuck did Wii Fit come out, you know?
Yeah. It's, but here's the thing. Here's kind of my theory on this.
Okay.
The way they've announced Smash Bros. Games in the past, they've had the months-long lead-up where, like, Sakurai would have his blog and he would, like, introduce all of this. Do you remember any of that?
Yes, I remember that for Brawl.
It was especially, it was especially clear for Brawl because I think Sakurai is, like, a super details-oriented guy.
Yeah.
And he loves getting into the minutia. He loves sharing the minutia. And a lot of Smash Bros. Fans love hearing about the minutia, right?
Sure.
But it feels like because they, like, kind of gagged him until 6 months before release, he had to do it all in 30 minutes at the E3 show. Don't you feel that? Like, that is like 3 years of blog posts that he delivered rapid fire on E3.
Yeah, because it's not even that. It's like, because then they also did, like, and we're going to talk about some stuff of, like, the frames on the, like, Invincible Shield thing is slightly different. And the change on, like, the frames for your invincibility changes based on the number of times you do. It's like, again, that sounds like fucking a patch. That's not something you put in your, like, E3 press conference for this video game. Like,
anyway.
It's such crazy shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about this more later. I would say most of the changes he explained are actually bigger than you would probably think if you don't actively play Smash Bros. But that's the point. If you don't actively play Smash Bros., it's hard to, like, communicate that.
And that's the kind of, that's what I was talking about, where it's like, you know, because I get it. You know, there are lots of games like Halo that I've been super into that are pretty competitive games that is the kind of thing of when, you know, Bungie would put out a blog post about, the, like, we've changed the way that the spread on the battle rifle shot works. I was interested in that.
Yeah.
That's not something that, it, like, even, like, because it's not even just, like, people who like these games. It's like, you have to really like them and play them a lot. You can't be someone who's like, oh, when the new Smash Brothers comes out, I play it with, like, my friends, like, a couple of days for, like, every other week, a month, and then I don't really touch it again.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Like, you, because, again, like, I didn't remember that you couldn't charge Samus's shot in midair. Nobody fucking remembers that unless the only character you play is Samus or you are into the competitive Smash Brothers scene.
I'm neither, but I do remember it. But your point is well taken.
But you didn't remember the fucking Pokemon trainer shit.
No,
right?
I didn't.
Like, there's stuff that you didn't realize was not a, was a thing or not a thing until they pointed it out.
Yes, it was. They were targeting a lot of very granular Smash Bros. Fans, which is fine. Great. That is not like a negative, like, dark fandom, so that's fine.
Yeah,
but it was.
But
yeah.
Do that in your Treehouse show.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't do it in your Nintendo Direct when you also don't have anything else to show.
Yeah. So
this was how they ended it. Well, they had the one last.
Well, that's the weird thing. I think they did have other things to show. They just didn't show them.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let me finish just the last couple announcements here. They're switching some characters to what's called Echo Fighters now, like Lucina and Dark Pit. They've also announced Daisy as an Echo Fighter. So it's just a way they are. It doesn't change how you play them. Yeah. It's just a categorization thing. They also introduced the Inkling as the new fighter. Looks really cool. Like, they've really integrated that well. They did more details on assist trophies. My favorite new item they showed was a fake Smash Ball that just kills everyone on screen. Yeah. That is awesome.
That's a fine item, but when you're talking about, like, here's the new assist trophies and the new items in Smash Bros., it's like, save this for another show.
Okay.
What are you doing?
We get it. Stages. Massive list of returning stages from across the series. They showed off ones like Princess Peach's Castle from Melee, the Spirit Train from 3DS, Green Hill Zone from Brawl, New Pork City from Brawl, Wrecking Crew from Wii U, Tortimer Island from
Melee?
Wii U. No, Tortimer Island is Animal Crossing.
Okay.
They did show the Turtle Zelda stage,
Great
Bay, which is from Melee.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yoshi's Island from N64 is back too. I don't think that one's ever been in another one, so that's great. And then this was probably the most granular part, was when he talked about new techniques like ladder attacks, directional air dodge, A plus jump doing a short hop attack, A plus B and smash.
That was the one that was the most absurd, because what they said was, as like the last game, you can do smash attacks by pressing A and B. They made no claims to anything was different about that. They just said, like the last game, this is something you could do in this game also. It's like, what?
Yeah. There are little things I liked, like in a timed battle, fighters in the lead now flash with light, so you know who's winning.
Sure. That's fun. That should be in the patch notes.
Sure. Let's see. He also showed off that you can play it with the GameCube controller. One thing I thought was weird is that, so GameCube controller is supported in the Nintendo Switch. If you have, you have to have the USB thing where you plug it in and then you can plug in your existing GameCube controllers to it. They did not announce, like, they're selling new GameCube controllers and a new Nintendo first party, like, USB hub. I assume they will, but if they don't, that's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I totally understand the people who like playing Smash with the GameCube controller. That is the closest that a game and a controller have ever been developed together, probably. So I get it. I'm kind of past that personally, but that's okay.
I mean, it's stuff like that when you start announcing that, that is, again, like, it feels like you, like, it felt like you were, I'm not in this room. Like, you're not talking to me. Like, you are talking to a very small section of fans of this game that are, again, not even the people that are just, like, casually interested in Smash Brothers when you're talking about, and we support the USB adapter for the GameCube controller from the last game. It's like, why is this in your E3 press conference? Why are you telling me this?
All right. Finally, the last thing, though. This was fucking cool.
Sure.
They introduced their newest challenger, and they did it with one of my favorite video clips at E3 this year, which is
Mega Man got fucking impaled.
Yes. So Mega Man, Mario, and Samus are walking down a dark corridor in space. Mega Man gets impaled by a tail.
Yeah.
Mario gets taken off and killed. Samus turns around and Mario's cap is on the ground, which I was like, that's traumatic.
Yeah.
And then Ridley comes out and Ridley takes the cap and taunts Samus. And Ridley, it says, Ridley hits the big time. And then we got our clip package of Ridley in Smash Brothers. We've been asking for it forever.
Sure.
Fucking Ridley is in the game. Oh my god, it was awesome. And that was also one, though, I thought that one did thread the needle well between things fans have been asking for a bunch and something that looked like a big, cool announcement because they packaged it that way. It wasn't like, and here's Ridley's hitbox detection. You know, they didn't go down to that.
That's next year's E3.
They did do that in the treehouse. He got they showed off Ridley
because
fighting
everything. Because he is very big. Because that's like the meme or whatever it always came at some point with Smash Brothers of people wanting Ridley to be in the game, which is, you know, a Metroid sort of like mini boss that has a pretty cool design. And I feel like every time people were asking for it, there was like, we can't put him in the game because he's like 10 times bigger than any of the other characters and a tiny Ridley would look fucking weird.
And he does because he is sized down to
be
in a
Smash
Bros. Game.
And it looks like he's developed severe back issues because it's like he's just crunched into like a little ball like to make his like proportions work.
Yes. But it did look cool. And I hope like the 8 colors for Ridley are just all the different resurrections of Ridley. Because we've had like, at this point in Metroid, like 5 different metal Ridleys. We've had like zombie Ridley. We've had Franken Ridley. Like there's all the different Ridleys over the course of the series. And he's more than just a mini boss, Sean. He's like the final boss in a lot of the games.
Oh, I didn't realize he was the final boss.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll have like Mother Brain after him, who is more, I would compare it to like in Persona 3, you have your big final boss and then the like Burn My Dread final battle, which is more like a story event. Ridley usually takes the like big final battle place in a lot of these.
I typically have not finished Metroid games I've played.
That's okay.
It's not really my job.
Yes. But Ridley's cool. I love Ridley. They played the Ridley music. It was great. And I'm glad he's in the game. And they also announced the game is available December 7th, 2018. That was a surprise.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone assumed this was their September game to launch with the online service.
And now you're just like, why are you doing the online service in September? Because what are people going to play? Like old Splatoon 2, which is a year old?
I don't know. It's weird. I mean, take the online thing out.
Yeah.
December, I think, we just said this the other day. Someone should just put out a game in December.
Yeah.
And make all the money. That is smart. That's actually where Smash for Wii U also came out.
Yeah, it's a very, like, Nintendo or Japanese company spot because they don't give a shit about the holiday season.
Well,
like,
and
the
also,
American holiday season.
And it makes sense. A lot of people will get it for Christmas with their new Switches. It'll drive sales. I personally will have more time to play it, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll probably be coming home and I can play it with my family and everything. So, yeah, it's very exciting. That's Smash Brothers. And before we do final thoughts on it,
okay,
I'm just going to read the roster of characters. Because there are, Sean, there are 65 characters in this fucking game.
Which means that they need to add 4 more.
Yes.
Hey.
All right.
69.
Let's see if I can do this. Mario, Donkey Kong, Link, Samus, Yoshi, Kirby, Fox, Pikachu, Luigi, Ness, Captain Falcon, Jigglypuff, Peach, Daisy, Bowser, Ice Climber, Sheik, Zelda, Dr. Mario, Pichu, Falco, Marth, Lucina, Young Link, Ganondorf, Mewtwo, Roy, Mr. Game & Watch, Meta Knight, Pit, Dark Pit, Zero Suit Samus, Wario, Snake, Ike, Pokemon Trainer, Diddy Kong, Lucas, Sonic, King Dedede, Olimar, Lucario, Rob, Toon Link, Wolf, Villager, Mega Man, Wii Fit Trainer, Rosalina and Luma, Little Mac, Greninja, Mii Fighter, 3 types, Brawler, Sword Fighter, and Gunner, Palutena, Pac-Man, Robin, Shulk, Bowser Jr., Duck Hunt, Ryu, Cloud, Corrin, Bayonetta, Inkling, and Ridley. That is a ridiculous roster for a fighting game.
That is a lot of characters, and somebody should put that into a Pokemon-style rap.
That's what I was just thinking. We do need the Poke Rap. It should be just like, it should be like the opening theme song for this game, like when you load up the menu.
That challenger?
It's Greninja?
Yeah.
One other note I liked is that David Hayter is coming back to voice Snake for this game. He was kicked out of the franchise after 4 for some reason, for Kiefer Sutherland.
But to be fair, he's the only person who's ever voiced Solid Snake in English.
That's true.
Because Kiefer Sutherland voiced Naked/Venom Snake/The Big Boss in Metal Gear Solid 5. And yeah, cool. Like I like David Hayter. It's cool that he gets to come back. There is a part of me that really wishes Kiefer Sutherland was a voice in the fucking Smash Bros. Game, because that was the only thing more ridiculous than Kiefer Sutherland in a Metal Gear Solid game is Kiefer Sutherland in a Smash Bros. Game.
You're absolutely right. But hey, maybe that's one of his alternate costumes. Or maybe one of the DLC characters can be the big boss.
Yeah.
And it's Kiefer.
They just take voice clips, like the 5 voice clips of his lines from that game.
Yes. All right. So anyway, I do think it's crazy that they not crazy, but it is pretty cool they got Snake back. Because after he got pulled out, I kind of assumed, like...
Yeah, that sounded like that was, like, a licensing thing, which it probably was. And I assumed that that was a, like, probably a big thing they had to do with Konami to get him in.
Well, they had to go find them in a pachinko parlor and... Yeah. They had to beat them at a game of pachinko to win the rights to Snake back.
Yeah.
Anyway... So, last thoughts on Smash Bros. I think the big question, outside of the presentation, we've talked about that. You were asking this, is this a new Smash Brothers game?
It is called, because one thing we didn't say, we haven't said the title of the game, it is called Super Smash Brothers Ultimate.
Yes.
And I just want to also point out, in Japanese, it is called Dairanto Smash Brothers Special. So
nice.
Super Smash Brothers Special. Both the Smash Brothers Ultimate and Smash Brothers Special sound like DX versions of Smash Brothers. I know that that's not what this is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it fucking clear. It should be called Smash Brothers 5.
Well,
just put numbers on it.
No, okay. I don't want numbers. But I actually like the title Smash Brothers Ultimate. I get the idea. Because here's what it is. I don't think it's fully Smash 5. I think it's kind of Smash 4.5. It's kind of like a greatest hits thing. It seems like the goal of this one... And it's kind of what I predicted when this was announced. They were going to make a new Smash Brothers. I think this is kind of how I explained it. Smash 4 is really recent. It's only 4 years old. Usually they leave a much longer space in between, but the Wii U flopped, and so they couldn't do that this time.
Yeah.
And so it also means that just, like, times have changed less. There's not a huge graphical upgrade they can give at this time. They're going from HD to HD. The Switch is more powerful than the Wii U, but not by a magnitude or anything, right? It's not like all of the different franchises have had time to have, you know, radical new entries. Like, you know, there's new costumes for Mario from Mario Odyssey, but Mario did not, like, get a facelift or anything, right?
Yeah.
So there's not the same kind of need to do a complete overhaul. And I think they've taken a smart approach to figuring out how to do that without just porting over Smash 4. It feels like they used Smash 4 as kind of the basis. They said, what can we do to make this, like, the most definitive version of this, hence having every single character in it, which is really cool. It's got stages from across the whole series. I don't think they're committing to having every stage from across the whole series in it. That does sound like it would be very difficult.
Yeah, that would be a lot. That would be bad because there'd be too many stages.
Yes.
Like, at some point, too much is too much.
Right. So, but it is a list of stages from throughout the series, with new stages, with some new characters, with some new mechanics that refine the Smash Brothers approach. But I think if you were looking at this feeling like you're going to get the same jump between Melee and Brawl or Brawl and Wii U, it's probably not going to feel that rapid. I could be wrong. I haven't played it. It's got, you know, it's not like it's using the same menus and everything. It's new UI. They've added a lot of cool little quality of life things. There are now, like, fighter cards at the beginning, like in Tekken. There's little things they've changed, like you pick your stage before you pick your fighters, which makes sense because you pick your stage and then you pick a fighter that's best for that stage. I guess fans had been asking for that. I didn't know that. But anyway, it's in there. You know, and as I said on Twitter, like, I do think a lot of the seemingly little changes will, if you play Smash Brothers, anything more than just, like, casually at a friend's house, some of them will have ripple effects that are wider than you think. Like, I remember one of the big mechanical shifts between 3 and 4, Brawl and Wii U, is they added the stage grab invincibility. So when you're on the edge of a stage and you get back up, you have a brief invincibility window. And that really wound up changing a lot of things, not just for the competitive scene, but kind of how edge grabbing kind of worked. And things they've done in this one, like... you cannot guard infinitely. It, like, makes you vulnerable if you do it more than two or three times in a row.
Yeah.
Your shield, you have to be much more precise on the timing. It kind of takes away that, you can, like, you can't spam dodging and everything so much. You can't spam guarding so much. It forces you into more active competition with one another. And they've sped up the entire game. And I've also seen this from everyone who's, like, played it, journalists who've looked at it, is it's not just the Smash balls. They've brought it, like, another notch faster for everything. Things just happen faster. It's more fluid. And it does feel like every mechanical change they outlined was in that goal of getting it really, like, tight, fast, refined. And I think overall it does look like a Smash Brothers game that is attempting to do what the title implies, Ultimate, be like the definitive, if you own a Smash Brothers, this is the only one you need to own, on Nintendo's big, cool hybrid console. It feels like everything you would want out of a Smash Bros. Game. It looks like it's doing a lot to cater to both hardcore fans and casual fans, because it's got all the nitty-gritty stuff that the hardcore fans have been asking for, but it's also got all your casual fun stuff. So, yeah, the only thing we didn't learn about is single-player stuff.
Yeah, that's actually was going to be one of my questions, because that feels like that is one of the things I would have rather seen instead of some of this weird shit is... Because that would have very immediately clarified, or do you consider this to be a like new Smash Brothers game or not? Is it all new single player stuff? Like, are you doing a different approach? Because, you know, I didn't play Smash Brothers 4, but from what I understand of the structure of that, like basically the single player offerings of all the Smash Brothers games have been pretty different.
Yes. So Smash Brothers, the original one just has the classic mode where you fight.
It's an arcade ladder.
Yeah, an arcade mode. Melee had an arcade mode plus that adventure mode thing, and it had the like all-star mode, things like that. Yeah. Smash 3 had all of that stuff, and it also had the Subspace Emissary, which was the like campaign mode.
Like story with weird CG cutscenes and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool little thing they did. It has never come back. Sakurai was apparently very sad that people just put his cutscenes online, and so he didn't want to do it again. Which is a very Japanese way of looking at that.
Yes, 100%.
But anyway, and then 4 had... 3DS and Wii U had completely separate. Even the like classic arcade modes were laid out completely differently. But their big marquee modes were... 3DS had something called Smash Run, where you had a 5-minute thing to go through this like cool maze of corridors and get power-ups. And then you had a fight at the end with your power-ups with other players... computers or real people. And Smash Run is great. I love Smash Run, and I hope some version of that is in this, because it's particularly great for portable, and it would be a great pitch for the Switch. Wii U had an absurdly horrible mode that was like a board game thing. I only played it through a couple of times. I don't remember what it... I think it was called Smash Tour. It was really bad. No one liked it. Luckily, there was enough other stuff that no one cared, but I do not assume Smash Tour is coming back. But we'll see. You're right, because I would, to like correctly gauge the, is it just 4.5, is it 4.8, is it just 5, if it is like a collection of like greatest hits, like, you know, single player stuff, then that feels more like a 4.5 thing. If it's your arcade modes and all that, but an all new like take on single player, that feels much more new. The fact that they so conspicuously left it out makes me think that that will be the focus of an upcoming Nintendo Direct, probably.
Sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. I am curious... I wouldn't mind if they tried something like the Subspace Emissary again, because it was so goofy.
I would watch those cutscenes on YouTube. Yes. Sorry, Sakurai-san.
It's okay.
But that's how I am.
Yeah, I think there's lots of possibilities, so we'll see. And I assume it will at least have all the arcade mode stuff.
Of course, it's definitely going to have an arcade ladder for sure, but it's like the other stuff, because they have gotten weirdly ambitious sometimes with that. And I'm interested to see what their ideas are for other single-player modes in fighting games.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Smash Brothers Ultimate for the Nintendo Switch. I've already pre-ordered it.
Of course you did.
Oh, there you go. Oh, I also just want to say, have you seen the cover art for this game?
Yes, it's very good.
God, it's good. It is so good. Like, Smash Bros. Cover art over the years has kind of just gotten better and better. But this one, like, it looks like hand-painted. It's really cool. Like, it's like hand-drawn art. And it looks awesome. Donkey Kong in the back swinging and looking angry is one of my favorite parts. I love it. Mario is, like, doing a drop kick. It looks very cool. So anyway, it's coming out December 7th. I'm stoked for it. That's one of the games at Best Buy. If you pre-order, you get a $10 gift card. So, you know, it's one place you might want to do it. I don't know. I just noticed that when I went to pre-order it today. So Smash Brothers. Anything else to say about that?
I am on the Japanese Wikipedia page for Smash Brothers, and I never knew what the Japanese names for Smash Brothers were.
They're weird. They're different. Yeah.
It's Nintendo All-Star, Dairanto. I'm just going to not do the Dairanto part. Nintendo All-Star Smash with like Super Smash Brothers. Super Smash Brothers DX, Super Smash Brothers X, Super Smash Brothers for Nintendo 3DS and Wii U. They kept the same titles for those, and then Super Smash Brothers Special.
Yeah.
I like that they went DX X. So yes. Smash Brothers Brawl is Smash Brothers X in Japan.
Yeah, you were complaining a couple years ago about the lazy like titles for 3DS and Wii U. It turns out that Smash Bros. Had always had pretty lazy titles in Japan, and we had cool ones over here.
It makes sense that like because Melee and Brawl would be bad subtitles for a Japanese market.
Sure.
I'm complaining about like the Super Smash Brothers Special name feeling like unclear, but they named the sequel to the first one Smash Brothers DX. So, they're getting better at it, apparently.
They are. They really are. So anyway, Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, taking the world by storm. I'm excited. We'll play that in December.
And that was it.
That was it.
That was it for their press conference. No, like, one thing I was thought they were probably going to show was some of, like, their NES stuff on Nintendo Switch Online, but since they didn't talk about any of the online service stuff, they didn't talk about that. It feels like they have to talk about and show that at some point. You have to show one of those games running on a Switch. You just, like, on, like, one of these directs.
Yeah.
You need to show it at some point. This would have been a time to do that. They did not.
Yeah. So, who knows? But we'll see.
It was a very weird Nintendo Direct as someone who is not that, like, desperately interested in a new Smash Bros. Game.
I understand. I totally understand. But I was still hyped for it.
Of course.
So there you go. Yeah. I can't lie. All right. Let's go ahead and move on, Sean. You want to do some, like, wrap-up stuff?
Yeah. There's a couple of things I noted of, like, stuff that was not at the show that I thought maybe would appear that I was interested in seeing. Rocksteady didn't show up anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have no idea what they're working on. It's
in general, this was not a year of announcements. Big new stuff.
I would say generally speaking, like, there were Microsoft had quite a few third party announcements of new games, but
yeah. But how many, like, unexpected, like, you know, that we didn't know this studio was working on this?
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, there was no huge, like, incredible surprise.
And the big ones we did get were from Bethesda and their games for, like, the PS6.
Yeah, that are far off. And then part of that was, of course, also this was the most leaky E3 by far.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like we already knew that Rage 2 would have been I can't believe you're making this game. We already knew about Just Cause 4.
The Rock Band performance makes a lot more sense in that context of, what if we didn't know about Rage 2?
Yes.
That would have made more sense, but yes.
Yeah, so a lot of that stuff was already, like, leaked and out there, basically. But yeah, in general, a pretty easy... Because like, the last year's E3 did have quite a few big new game announcements, and so we're still kind of paying off some of those, as seen by Ubisoft's press conference, where they showed most of the same games from last year. No Borderlands 3, also. So that's one of the Canadian Walmart leaks that did not show up anywhere. So I don't know. It's an open secret that Gearbox is working on the game. Like, in the fact that they said, like, 4 years ago, we are making a Borderlands 3. Not in any way of, like, they showed anything. They just said, that's a project that we're working on. Nothing from that since. So they're working on it. I just don't know when the fuck they're going to show it.
That's true, because Gearbox doesn't have, like... I guess they could do their own Nintendo Direct-style thing.
Yeah, anybody can do their own live stream.
Right, but they don't usually do that. They haven't done that in the past, so...
And Microsoft was wide open for trailers. You could have put a fucking trailer. Like, you know, they had... Like, Borderlands 3 is a much higher profile game than, like, a Dying Light 2. And they gave, like, 5 minutes to Dying Light 2.
Exactly. So,
weird.
What do you make of the other games that were on the Walmart Canada leak? Like, Borderlands 3, Splinter Cell?
Yeah.
I mean, we know Borderlands 3 is happening. Do we have any other confirmation about a Splinter Cell thing?
There is no other confirmation. It's just, like... They have to be. There was one thing was, there was a DLC, like, free update thing for Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands that had Splinter Cell stuff in it, and Michael Ironside, who's the voice of Sam Fisher, typically. Like, in the last game, he wasn't Sam Fisher. They recast him because they, like, made him younger. But in this, Sam Fisher was there in, like, a cameo and voiced by Michael Ironside with new lines, and that was one of the things that people were like, oh, that's an indication that if they, like, struck a deal with Michael Ironside and had him in a recording booth, it would be weird if it was only for this, like, little cameo in this fucking Wildlands free DLC update. That was one of the things that, like, of course they must be working on a Splinter Cell game. They must be. They have to be. Because they, like, that's what's up in the cycle, you know? They've done fucking Ghost Recon. They've done Rainbow Six. And the Tom Clancy Eternal cycle that we must always walk through, that they throw, like, new little bits like Division in there every once in a while. Splinter Cell is up. I want a new Splinter Cell game. I've been asking for a new Splinter Cell game at these conferences for, like, 2 or 3 years. It's been on my predictions list. It has not showed up.
I don't know if it's going to happen, Sean.
But, like, the thing is, that Canadian Walmart leak was so dead on accurate for so much stuff that nobody would have ever, like, predicted. Like, a Just Cause 4 and Rage 2, nobody was saying anything about those games. That I assume that there was something going on that, like, put that out there. I just don't know, like, what that means for when those games are going to be shown.
It is very strange to try to figure out, you know, exactly what you just said. When would we see them if we see them? Because they're apparently far enough along that retailers knew about them.
Yes.
So
I wonder if it's something of where, like, that's their, like, big thing for Ubisoft next year at E3 is they, like, show that game and release it soon, at, like, later that year or something.
Yeah.
In a Bethesda-style way. That's a possibility.
It is. So who knows? We'll find out.
Yep.
All right. Any other games that were conspicuously absent?
I mean, there's no... I mean, a lot of Square Enix stuff of, like, no Final Fantasy VII. Well, yeah. Another Walmart one. But we've kind of talked about that. One thing I thought was interesting is... I didn't see as many Switch ports on, like, Ubisoft and EA stages as I was expecting. Particularly EA didn't, like, really address it. Bethesda had a couple of things, but nothing, like, big new that they were porting to the Switch. And I was expecting a little bit more of that. And also, I was expecting to see a couple of, like, a couple of more Battle Royale kind of gets of, like... And mostly that was, I was expecting Microsoft stage to have, like, four of those, like weird indie games that were Battle Royale games. And we really only got... Battlefield 5's mode that they announced. I think that's the only main one that was on stage.
The Battle Royale one was a big surprise. The lack of Switch ports is also surprising. It's tough to know what to make of it. There have been so many, maybe it's just like we're in a valley and we'll get back to a peak.
Yeah.
I don't think it indicates any doom and gloom like third parties are abandoning Switch.
No, yeah.
It does, you know, for Bethesda, it could... I mean, Bethesda did just do three huge ports for it. Wolfenstein 2, Skyrim, and Doom. So there are only so many resources in the world. But I don't know. Obviously, we are hitting a technical wall with some of these. Like, Fallout 76 is not coming to Switch for obvious reasons. Yeah. You know, Assassin's Creed Origins is not coming to Switch. But there are other ones that are out there. But we did get a lot of... we got things like, you know, the new Trials is coming to that. Like, it seems like more mid-level games that can do it are doing it. But yeah, and the Battle Royale thing was, I wanted to make more Battle Royale jokes this week.
Yep, and there was, I had a whole Battle Royale counter going in the EA's press conference. I got to put a notch up, and it's like, oh, like, I guess I can count PUBG on Microsoft, and I guess I can count Fortnite coming to the Switch. But
those aren't new.
Yeah, but not enough to have any fun with it, so I just gave up.
Like Call of Duty, we know that they're doing the Battle Royale in Black Ops 4. So.
And they didn't even talk about it for like that weird little like segment they had in Sony's for like a half second. All they talked about was old Black Ops maps in a very like Nintendo Smash Brothers kind of way. Old Black Ops maps are coming to Black Ops 4. It's like anybody who is not already bought into Black Ops 4 is going to give a shit. It's only people that already have pre-ordered this game care that like Nuketown is in it again, because of course it is.
All right.
The last trend I want to talk about a little bit before we get to our lists and stuff is I thought it was interesting that EA and Microsoft were both talking about all that streaming stuff.
Yeah.
And that was not hinted at. That was not like I didn't hear anybody predict that that was going to be a thing ever addressed at this E3. And that took me by surprise. Like, I was sort of worried when you were getting to, like, Sony and Nintendo that, like, oh, God, are they going to talk about a bunch of streaming shit? I mean, obviously, Sony already has PS Now, and they're, like, very quietly doing updates and all that shit to that service. I thought for a second, like, is Nintendo going to jump on this, too? Are we suddenly here and just nobody knew that the streaming apocalypse is upon us?
Nintendo does have, this wasn't on the stage, but did you hear about in Japan, Resident Evil 7 is on Switch as a streaming game?
That's right, I forgot about that.
That's wild. But, yeah, I don't know. I have heard that there are a lot of people within the industry, like higher ups, who view streaming as a future. Like, that is a persistent chatter I hear about.
It's been an ongoing experiment for, like, over 10 years. Because there's that online service forever ago that no longer exists. That was the first one I knew of that tried to do this.
But I think it's Yves Guillemot at some point has had a quote on the record where he said, there's probably only one more console generation and then it doesn't matter. Yes, it's all streaming.
There was an article before, like, right before E3 happened with quoting him and Phil Spencer both talking about that. I think it was on The Verge.
Which, honestly, here's the trend it does fit into, Sean. There is always a trend at E3 of people high up in these companies trying to pitch a technical thing that is not there technically, and it's not something consumers have any desire for.
Yeah.
And that was VR in years past.
Yes, it
was,
or remember HoloLens for HoloLens? Microsoft? They had that one year where they had a bunch of HoloLens stuff, and that has never come up again. I think that's out.
3D gaming and 3D TVs at some point. Like, streaming for video games probably will be a more standard thing one day, but I think especially people who work in the gaming industry, who work in, like, Austin and California and New York, where there is fiber optic internet and it's all really, really good and it's like subsidized by very liberal governments, don't understand that the majority of the country, let alone the world, just can't do it. It's not possible, and it's completely incompatible with any of your, like, here's our cool graphics and tech stuff, because if you can do it, it doesn't usually look very good.
Uh-huh.
And that there's not a lot of desire among hardcore gamers who, some of them don't even like using wireless controllers, let alone using, you know, streaming gaming. So, like, Yeah, maybe at some point in our lifetimes, but not anywhere in the near future that you should be, like, planning for, at least as a public-facing thing.
I'm not convinced that civilization, human civilization, will exist as we understand it by the time that we would have had technology good enough to do this. I think we will have destroyed our, like, way of life before we have achieved that, so...
Probably. I mean, it really... You're trusting in an infrastructure idea that is just out of step with human history, let alone...
That also they have no control over, right? Yes. So it's like Ubisoft and Microsoft do not dictate the, like, larger internet policies of the United States government that actually... And, like, the other internet companies, like of Verizon and Capcom and everybody, and Time Warner, that, like, create the situation that is so fucked.
If we had free fiber optic internet throughout the United States... Which actually would be I think a major project someone should run on politically, because that would, I think, be the 21st century equivalent of, like, Eisenhower's interstate program.
Uh-huh.
And I think whoever did that would be remembered like Eisenhower is for interstates, because it's the same idea just for the 21st century. And it sounds expensive, then you're like, yeah, but in one presidential administration we built all the roads in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
It can be done. And it would be a huge public service. And then you could be talking about that. But
so let's do this. Let's revolutionize internet in America entirely so that we can stream games with, like, slightly better latency.
But that's my point. Like, imagine a world where we never had the highway interstate program, and then you had all these companies talking about, like, and we're going to somehow get our packages shipped all over the U.S.
Yeah.
They would sound insane, right?
Uh-huh.
Because we didn't have it. So I'm not trying to get, like, politically into the weeds, but, like, that's one of the reasons it's a weird thing to be talking about. I mean, just today we got the news that AT&T and Time Warner got their merge approved, which means that we're moving away from that future, not towards it.
Exactly.
Because that means worse internet for everybody, not better. Mergers do not make the world better. Anyway, this has been the political weeds portion of the podcast.
And that's, like, just, like, the one sort of weird... Because you're right. There usually is something at each E3 that's, like, a weird, like, twinkle in someone's eye of an idea they have. Yeah. And then, like, you know, Phil Spencer, like, fucking philosophizes about it on stage for 5 minutes. Which is, like, one of those things of, I like when he does that, but he's also done that for, like, 5 years in a row, and I'm kind of like with EA's indie stuff. It's like, you need to do something else, because I can't, it's making me way too cynical about this when you do this over and over again, and I can just see the patterns.
Yeah. All right, let's do some ranking.
Yes.
Let's start with a basic one. I ranked the shows. Did you rank the shows?
Yes, I ranked the seven conferences. I included Square Enix. I don't know if you included.
Wait, what are the seven? I'm missing one. I missed Microsoft. That says something.
Okay.
But, oh, God, where would I put Microsoft here?
I know where I put Microsoft.
You do your list first while I try to figure out where Microsoft goes on mine.
My list is starting at the bottom.
Start at the bottom.
Number seven, Square Enix, of course.
Okay.
Why the fuck? Where did they show up? Number six was Electronic Arts because, you know, they could not do anything to sort of, I feel like, stymie the weird bleeding that they had from last year. They did not have any, like, interesting showings for any of the new projects. They completely fell on their face with Anthem. They didn't, like, they showed some, like, bad mobile games, and they didn't even show their sports games as well as they usually do, which is, like, usually not great, but here they didn't even try to pitch you on why Madden 19 was different than Madden 18 or FIFA 19 was different than FIFA 18. They did nothing with that. They spent almost no time on Battlefield 5. It is like the shining, like, icon of how bad the EA press conference was this year, even to the low standards of an EA press conference is. In the last 2 years, they have ended their press conference segueing into a 30-minute live stream showing a bunch of people playing Battlefield 1 and then Battlefront 2, their new big DICE multiplayer games for that fall season. This year, they showed people a 30-minute live stream of people playing the World Cup DLC for FIFA 18, the FIFA game that is already out, not even the fucking new FIFA game. They didn't even show the new FIFA game. They showed the existing FIFA game with, like, a roster update.
That's so amazing.
EA was real bad this year.
Oh,
yeah. And they should be eternally grateful for Square Enix for accidentally putting some trailers on the internet and calling an E3 press conference that they were not at the bottom, because otherwise they 100% would be. Number five for me was Nintendo, because for all the reasons we just said, like, as someone who is not that, like, you know, starstruck by the idea of another Smash Brothers game, they didn't really show much. Like, all they showed was Smash Brothers, and the way they showed it was kind of dull to me. They did have a couple of good trailers. I liked the Daemon X Machina game trailer. I really liked the Fire Emblem trailer, so that stuff was cool, but it was a weirdly sort of very thin showing from Nintendo, which I was surprised by. Number four for me was Ubisoft. It was like, it was one of those things of, it's a very entertaining show that Ubisoft put on, as they usually do. But as we talked about when we did that conference podcast, they did not show anything surprising or new. The most surprising thing they had was Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is already leaked. And even if it hadn't been leaked, it wouldn't. It would have been a, like, oh god, why are you making another Assassin's Creed game so soon? Please take a break. You're going to drive this franchise into the ground again after you just put out a, like, probably one of, if not your best Assassin's Creed games. Number three was Microsoft. I thought Microsoft, while they, you know, for me, the thing with Microsoft is they didn't have anything to show, and they put on a really strong show despite it. You know, I thought they had a really solid message and platform for Microsoft in the future. It's not something that convinces me to get, like, all in on Microsoft now, but it is something that, like, you know, they bought, they formed a studio and bought four other studios, including Ninja Theory, which is a big get. They, you know, are working on some Halo thing, and at least it's not like they're shitting out a Halo 6, so there's some potential there. You know, that Gears, you liked Gears 4, and you liked that Gears 5 trailer, so then you liked that Gears 5 trailer more than you seemed, like, ever enthusiastic about Gears 4, so people seem to like that thing okay.
It was fine.
Yes. Chris Avellone was on stage, and I like him as a writer, and maybe that Dying Light 2 game will be okay. And they showed Sekiro, the next From Software game, so yes, they get points for that as well. So that's my number three for Microsoft. Then, of course, the big two. It was very hard for me to place these two.
Me too, yeah.
But my number two is Sony, for me. I think with Sony, it is that kind of, they had four fucking unbelievably strong gameplay demos, but they were of games that were already announced. The Ghost of Tsushima one was the one that was mostly a surprise because, you know, that's a brand new IP, never seen it before. That demo knocked my socks off. But they also had a very hitchy show in a weird way. They did that fucking thing of, hey, this Last of Us 2 demo starts in this weird, like, church thing, so let's start our press conference as a weird church thing, and then move everybody to our normal show conference floor, and, like, just have our pre-show guys vamp for, like, 30 minutes and show some Call of Duty DLC. And that is honestly probably the main reason why it is number two.
Yeah.
Because my number one is Bethesda, just because I thought Bethesda had a fucking unbelievably good press conference. Even though the highs of that conference for me were not as high as the gameplay demos that Sony showed, they had such consistent, strong, fluid messaging for their brand and platform. They showed a wide variety of different games. Even the games they showed that I don't really care about, like an Elder Scrolls Legends or a Quake Champions, the community managers and developers they had on stage talking about those games were all affable. They all felt like they cared about what they were talking about. They didn't stand around, like, gabbing about it for too long and kind of got their pitch out there. And the show moved nicely, and then they dropped some huge mega bomb announcements at the end with, like, all the time spent on Fallout 76. They made me care about a fucking mobile game on an E3 press conference, which is something that has literally never happened before, with Elder Scrolls Blades. I loved their weird video with Keegan-Michael Key. It was really fucking
great. That was great, yeah.
There was just a lot of great humor. Pete Hines was great. Andrew WK was great. Like, there's just a great sense of humor and flow to it. And then, of course, announcing Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6. Even if it is those games are far off in the future, it is something I have always been asking for, of if you know that you're making this game, everybody knows that you are making these games, just announce the fucking games so we can get over it. I'm very glad they did that.
I agree. So, Sean, I think your list is perfect. I think it is scientifically dead on in terms of both your, like, this is clearly your preferences,
yeah,
but also, like, I think that's probably just the right ranking of the shows in terms of how they're going to be received, how they have been received.
Because obviously my, like, ranking is also more based on, like, less on, like, the entertainment factor and more on, like, the how they have positioned their brand and their message,
sure.
I thought was the strongest.
Yeah. Like, I don't think there's any question Bethesda walked away with this one in terms of, like, just hype and talk, but yeah, I'm going to rank them differently, mostly for the sake of ranking them differently.
Okay.
But I will just default to yours in the future. But here's what we got. Some of these I do feel strongly about.
Okay.
My number 7 was EA. And my number 6 was Square Enix.
I don't blame you.
And let me explain why.
Okay.
The Square Enix thing was nothing. It was just a giant wet fart of a show. It was baffling. But here's the thing. 28 minutes of confusion and nothingness is still preferable to me than 90 minutes of active suffering. And that's what EA was. It was 90 minutes of people stepping over their own feet, ending with the single most botched reveal of this E3, which was Anthem. Uh-huh. Anthem should have been a slam dunk. You are showing off the new BioWare game. It's big. It's cool. It's like the next game from the Mass Effect people. Like, that should have been big. Is anybody that this is Tuesday, the Tuesday of E3 talking about Anthem?
Yeah.
No. So like, I actually kind of feel strongly about this one. Nobody failed harder this year than EA. Square Enix kind of embarrassed themselves with a weird show, but Square Enix's games, which were scattered throughout the week, still look very good, and they've positioned themselves for a good year. EA had an awful, ill-produced, fucked-up show that also managed to botch the reveal of what should have been an exciting game, and they're probably going to kill BioWare. Yep. So fuck EA, theirs was 7. Square Enix, you got off easy because someone else fucked up even harder than you did. That's my view on those two.
Okay. I don't necessarily entirely disagree with that view. For me, like, the time thing doesn't come into play for my rankings.
Oh, the time thing comes into play for all my rankings.
Yeah, because you're obviously, like, a bit more focused on, like, how do you receive it and, like, what is, like, sort of part of, like, the entertainment factor in the show of it. And for me, it's more like... Like, the Square Enix press conference made them look like they were the most anemic, dead fucking video game on the, like, brand on the planet. At least Electronic Arts could summon up enough to have people on a stage talking about stuff, you know?
I understand. But, yeah, it's weird. Really, these are ranked by how much did you trigger my ADD, guys?
Fair enough.
Because I can't sit still that long. And, you know, so that's how it's really ranked. So number 5 was Nintendo. You also had Nintendo at 5.
I thought that was going to be higher for you.
I am kind of trying to balance it out. Because was Smash Bros. One of my favorite things to see this year? Yes. But did even I feel the pinch of, like, you're really micro-targeting to me. This feels uncomfortable. Like, I'm the only one in the room right now. But I really feel like I'm the only one in the room right now. So that, Nintendo had... Because also just in terms of, like, to expectation... It's not that Nintendo doesn't have other stuff to show off. They do. We know about some of it. And I was just disappointed a little as a Nintendo fan not getting more of that. On top of, I just think it was a weird kind of bad show. Yeah. So, whatever. Nintendo was fine. I just couldn't justify putting it higher, even if I went super subjective with
it. Yeah.
But, yeah. It was a thing. It was kind of a letdown.
Okay.
All right. Number 4. This is where I also have a split. So, 4 was Microsoft. And 3 was Ubisoft.
Okay, yeah.
So I flipped them again. And I actually went back and forth on these a lot in the last 5 minutes as I tried to rank Microsoft because I forgot about it. It really does come down to, for me, Microsoft was 2 goddamn hours long. Ubisoft was at least like 85 minutes or something.
Minutes,
it was 90 minutes. The Microsoft thing of showing a bajillion trailers does annoy me, and I just wanted to kind of knock them for it. Even though a lot of my favorite things I saw at E3 were at Microsoft... I just think it overall, it's such a messy show they do every year. It's so long. It's so overburdened with things. It also had, I think, one of the worst demos we got this week, which was that extra long Division demo, which I hated. It had some bright spots. Forza looked great. Halo Infinite was a very interesting teaser. Like, I don't know how else to say it. I don't know if it got me excited, but it was a thing, obviously. They had the steampunk trailer, which was great. Yeah. They had Jump Force, which I loved. But, yeah, overall, Microsoft just had a little too much down. And then not only was Ubisoft a half hour shorter, it had the Dancing Panda.
It had the Dancing Panda.
Nobody else had a Dancing Panda. Nope. It had the Grant Kirkhope Orchestra. Nobody else had the Grant Kirkhope Orchestra. And I used footage from it to edit together a fun video with Mario and Assassin's Creed. And that was a really fun part of my day yesterday. So, yeah... Overall, I do think Microsoft probably had a better show, but I also spent less time watching the Ubisoft one, and I really liked what I saw of Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Okay.
Except for the Joseph Gordon-Levitt thing, which I did go read more about, and fuck all that.
Yeah, it's fucking weird, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, again, I think I defer to you on that particular flip, but oh well. Then my 2 and 1, this is tough, but I'll say it this way. My 2 was Bethesda, and my 1 was Sony. And I think it comes down to this. Sony definitely had a weird show that hitch in the... Like, intermissions aren't supposed to come 20 minutes into your show, Sony. Like, if I went to see Lawrence of Arabia and the intermission was 10 minutes into the movie and then I had another 3.5 hours left, that'd be really bizarre. That's not where intermissions go. So that was bad. But the 4 things they showed were so good. It was the one show this year where they did not, like, lose me. Like, I was... So stoked off Last of Us 2, it took me through that 20-minute intermission. Then I was so stoked on Ghost of Tsushima. And then from there on out, it was solid gold, because they had a lot of really cool trailers peppered in between. And just, I guess, the group that I came away from this having the most games on stage that I know I'm going to get. Like, they showed four Big Pillar games, and I want all four of them. I loved all four of what they showed. I can't wait for each of those games. That's kind of where I judge it. But I don't want to shortchange Bethesda. Bethesda had a lot of great stuff. They kind of, like, half sold me on Rage 2, which I was not expecting.
Right, yeah.
Like, if it's a slow time of the year, I'd be happy to play Rage 2. That looks like a cool game, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, the biggest feather in Bethesda's cap for me, and the reason I would put them at number one if I were going to, is Fallout 76. Like, there were other big announcements, like Elder Scrolls 6 and Farpoint. What's it called? Starfield.
Starfield.
And
Farpoint is the, like, VR shooter game that on PSVR. I don't know how you got there.
I don't know. Well, Farpoint also, I think, is an old sci-fi show.
Okay.
Farscape. Yeah, Farscape. Okay. Anyway, you know, Elder Scrolls Blades looks cool. They had a lot. But I think nobody sold a game more effectively in terms of, like, a game that is hard to sell than Todd Howard and Fallout 76. Like, Ghost of Tsushima was probably the best demo we saw, but I was already excited for that.
Yeah.
There's no reason I'm not going to be excited for that. Unless, like, they really fucked up and everyone was talking Chinese or something, and then I was like, you really are racist. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
So, like, but there was a real delta here between, like, I did not have any thought that I would play Fallout 76 before that, and now I think I would like to make the time for it. And I just think in terms of pitching a difficult game, there was no better example of that than Todd Howard, Bethesda, Fallout 76. Just compare it to the Anthem thing. The gap could not be wider, and I do think, like, that is the biggest feather in Bethesda's cap for me, is how eloquently they introduced what was probably a very hard-to-introduce game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, those are my rankings, roughly. Ours are actually pretty similar, we just have a couple flipped.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, the general arc of the EA Square Enix end to the Sony Bethesda end, that is clearly the spectrum.
Yes, it's a pretty... Yeah, as you said, I think earlier on this podcast, it's a E3 of highs and lows and extremes.
Yes.
It's like there's some really good press conferences and some fucking real bad ones. Some of the worst I've seen.
Yeah. So anyway, those are the shows. I have a list of the games I came out of here most impressed by. Do you have
something like that? One, two, three. I have five more lists I have made.
Oh, I only have two more lists.
Okay.
Shit.
You don't need to create more lists. One of my lists only has three items on it.
Okay.
Do you want me to do that list right now?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Do a silly list.
This is my list of the best Kingdom Hearts 3 trailers at E3 2018. Number three was the trailer they showed at Square Enix. It is fucking amazing that the people publishing this game showed the worst trailer for this game on their own fucking like emaciated press conference. How is that even possible? It was mostly a remix of the trailer they showed at Microsoft. It had some new footage from fucking like Ratatouille or whatever, but that's it. What were they doing? Number two was the trailer they showed on Microsoft's press conference. This was the first Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer we saw at this E3, and therefore it gets some extra points for being mildly fresh. It was the first time I heard that really nice piano song when shit gets really serious in all three of these Kingdom Hearts 3 trailers that all use that same piano song, and it's a good song, and so there it is for Microsoft. My number one best Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer of E3 2018 is the one they showed on Sony's press conference. This was the meatiest. It had the most interesting gameplay footage. It had a very terrifying Orlando Bloom lookalike in it. But it had a good variety of different worlds for Kingdom Hearts 3. It had that really nice piano song in it. It also had the best terrible dialogue of any of these. And
it really did.
It had a couple of sentences that, again, I'm not entirely convinced are supposed to be the English language, even though they are. So of all of them, even though I was very tired of seeing Kingdom Hearts 3 trailers by the time they showed the Sony one, I think objectively speaking, the Sony Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer was the best Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer on the E3 2018 press conference.
I definitely agree with that one. I agree with that one. All right, I'm currently constructing another list as I go, but I'm going to go through data. So
I will tell you, so two of my lists are, because I was going to make one that was like the top 10 best game like presentations of E3, and I ended up splitting that actually into two lists. One was a top 10 best game demos, and one was best game trailers.
So
I had a hard time of putting both of those together.
I did a top 5 games, and it was ones that were specifically like substantially demoed.
Okay.
So I don't have beyond that top 5. I'm doing a worst one as well that I will have.
Okay.
But you go ahead and go through your...
I want to do my trailers first, because those are all...
Do you want me to do a silly list?
Okay,
go ahead. Since you did a silly list?
Yes, you have a silly list.
Here's my silly list. top five musical performances at E3 2018.
I was thinking about doing that, but it all got consumed into another list I made.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All five of these were great, I want to say. This is not like number five is bad. I liked all five of these. Number five was the Rage 2 song with Andrew WK.
Yep.
I thought it was cool. You know, rock music. I don't really know who Andrew WK is, but he was very game to sing about Rage. He likes to party. It was fun. It was a good way to kick off Bethesda's show. They have a good time. Number four was the Japanese flute player for Ghost of Tsukushima, the Shakuhachi player.
Shakuhachi.
It was very nice. It was very atmospheric. You know? It was good.
It's not a kind of instrument you usually see performed live.
Especially at a video game conference.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Number three was the Dancing Panda from Ubisoft.
Okay, yeah.
Very good. This is a good year because Dancing Panda only made it to number three.
It's true, yeah.
I loved that Dancing Panda. Number two was Gustavo Santaolalla for Last of Us Part Two, which was just an amazing atmospheric performance, helped in no small part by the amazing hoodie he had. So that was great. Yep. And number one was Grant Kirkhope and his band for Mario Plus Rabbids Donkey Kong Adventure. I just love that we're in a moment where the old Rare composers like Grant Kirkhope and
David Wise
are having kind of a little bit of a renaissance, so much so that he could be on stage playing his music, old Rare music, new music for this, and just celebrating a really fun look at this Donkey Kong DLC that's coming out. And yeah, definitely love that.
Yeah, the list I was making before I realized this was just the same shit that is on another one of my lists for that musical performances was the exact same, except for I had to put Gustavo Santaolalla above. Even though
I think
the Grant Kirkhope one is obviously a lot more impressive for a lot of reasons, but the audacity of starting the Sony press conference with Gustavo Santaolalla doing that, I thought was just amazing. So that was my favorite one of those, and that will come up again on one of my other lists.
All right.
So now I'm going to do my top 10 best game trailers list.
All right, so you're going to do some game trailers for us, Sean?
Yes, my top 10 best game trailers of E3 2018. So I made one list that was demos, one list that was trailers. And you could make arguments that some of the demo ones maybe are trailer ones, but whatever. Because that's, you know, there's a line between those. But whatever. My number 10 best trailer for E3 2018 was the Daemon X Machina one from Nintendo. A surprise hit coming in at the last second.
Nice.
This is here mostly because I really like mech stuff, and I thought those mech designs were fucking sweet and had cool rock music. And I liked that the trailer just stopped like mid-beat, basically, and just went like straight to the end and with the logo. And I thought that it just had a lot of impact and was very not Nintendo, and I liked it.
Yes.
My number 9 trailer is Tunic from the Microsoft press conference. That is the adorable fox, like Legend of Zelda looking game where he wears the green tunic and goes around and has little fun fox guy adventures, and it looks adorable. And I thought it was a really strong indie game trailer that looked unique and very striking in a way that a lot of like the indie game trailers have sort of lost that quality, I feel like, over the years that they used to have in like 2012 and 2013 when they started putting more of those on E3. Tunic like reminded me of those, of when you would see that and be like Galaxy was on the Sony stage or something. It's like, that fucking game looks awesome and striking. I really need to check it out. My number 8 game trailer is Fire Emblem Three Thrones. I thought that trailer was fucking awesome. I like Fire Emblem. That was easily the best thing that Nintendo had for me. And it was just something of, I had not considered what a Fire Emblem on the Switch would really look like until I saw it. And it looks like they're taking that series in some interesting different directions that looks really cool. Number 7 was for Doom Eternal.
Oh, yeah.
That was
a good one.
Like, it's like, there's almost nothing in that trailer, you know? It's obviously like a teaser to announce the game, but this used to be higher up on the list until I was like, I can't justify putting this up too high, because the main reason it is on here is just for the experience of being like, oh, fucking shit, they're making another Doom game, and this was the one that I literally, like, reflexively pumped my fist in the air when I realized it was Doom and, like heard the music. And so, yeah, it's a really well-done teaser trailer. It's the kind of thing that, you know, it's very easy to get that kind of reveal wrong, or you don't even try that reveal like EA did with their fucking Star Wars game. And, yeah, so Doom Eternal had a really good just sort of like, I'm going to tease the game, tell you we're working on it, but put together a nice little video package for that. I thought that was a great one of those. My number 6 is the Resident Evil 2 Remake trailer from Sony's press conference. This was There's a couple things that was great about this. Is one, it was a big surprise to have that there on Sony's stage. I was not really expecting it to show up, even though I knew they were making it. It, you know, it's coming out January of 2019, so it's very soon, and that's cool. The game looks like it's basically done, and it's just a really well-cut-together horror trailer that has some good reveals, like when they reveal rookie cop Leon S. Kennedy, and like he's like babyface because he's so young, pre-Resident Evil 4. That's all good. It made me very sympathetic for that poor mouse that dies at the beginning of that trailer.
Yep.
It's very well made. Number five is the Wolfenstein Young Blood trailer. This is kind of like the Doom Eternal one in that it doesn't really have much gameplay stuff, but I also think it's just so well put together and edited and has such a flavor and tone to it that that pushes it higher up on my list. Even though I don't really know, that there's like so much hanging in the air about, is this Wolfenstein 3? Is it a big DLC add-on for Wolfenstein 2? What are they doing with it? None of that matters because I saw, you know, BJ Blazkowicz's twin daughters training to doing a training montage to go fight the fucking Nazis while BJ Blazkowicz narrates ominously over them, and that's a good fucking trailer. That's one of those of where like I would just watch that trailer just to watch the trailer because it's really well made. Another one like that, like the epitome of that style of trailer for this year's E3 was the Beyond Good and Evil 2 CG trailer, which is basically just like a CG short film, which is really, really fucking cool. That's one that if you have not seen it, you should just watch that trailer to enjoy the trailer. It's not at the top of the list because it doesn't say anything to me much about the actual game, and so I didn't want to put it that high up. But in terms of just like raw trailer and kind of divorcing it from the game itself, that's the best one at E3. My number three trailer is for Control, the Remedy game that was at Sony's. This is one that it didn't strike me as hard the first time I watched it, but when I rewatched it later after the press conference, it really looks like a fucking awesome game.
It does.
It's like the trailer is clearly all in-game footage. It shows a lot of the combat, and the combat looks like if Quantum Break was good. There's like a lot of good psychic powers and throwing stuff, and they're shifting between the powers really quickly and fluidly in the middle of combat sequences, and so it looks like a lot of fun to play. But it also has that great Remedy sort of style and tone and flavor to it that games like Max Payne and Alan Wake have in spades. And Remedy is a studio that I really love Max Payne 1 and 2 and just have never gotten around to playing Alan Wake, even though I probably would really like that game. And so I'm excited to see them making another game that I'm pretty committed I'm going to check this game out when it comes out because it looks really cool. My number two trailer is Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, which was on the Microsoft press conference. This is the next From Software game being headed by Miyazaki at From Software. And, you know, I am a huge fan of Dark Souls 1, 2, 3. Well, huge fan of Dark Souls 1 and 3. Like Dark Souls 2 quite a bit. Love Bloodborne to death. And so them making another game is awesome. It's such a strong trailer that showcases so much of the game so well. There's a lot of things you can pick out about like the like grappling hooks and like movement mechanics and stuff like that that are in the game that separate it from Dark Souls. It looks like a very fresh sort of evolution of what that kind of Dark Souls formula is, which is very much what that studio needs to move in. It is one of a number of samurai games at this year's E3, and that just makes me happy because we went through a long period where there were basically no games set in that time period with that kind of stuff. And so Sekiro going there is a welcome addition to the little samurai game family of this generation that we are getting. And yeah, that trailer is a really well-made trailer, but it is also, I'm a huge fan of that studio, so I want to see what that game is. And then, of course, my number one trailer for E3 2018 is Cyberpunk 2077, because what else the fuck could it be? I watched that trailer maybe 7 times at this point, because it's only like 90 seconds long, so you can get through it real quick, but it has so much flavor and style and tone to it. It has such just an incredible visual sense of aesthetic and flair. I just immediately want to jump into that world. I want to like run around in it, see all the weird Ghost in the Shell like augmented humans and stuff. The like wide variety of different kind of people and environments and classes of people and types of people we see, from like people like redneck looking people living on the outskirts of the city to like CEO executives getting their brains fried in space planes to, you know, like people living like dealing cyber drugs or whatever it is in the like underbellies of the city. it's such a just incredible tone piece for that game and introducing you to the setting of Cyberpunk 2077, which seems to be a big selling point for this kind of game. And it also just looks so fresh. It looks like a take on Cyberpunk we have not had in video games for a long time. It is not just like another Blade Runner style Cyberpunk thing, which I like Blade Runner style, but I like the more like, you know, the Cyberpunk emphasis on the punk that this trailer has, and like the sun-washed city, like the ridiculous fashion, the very Ghost in the Shell style augmented humans that is so much more bizarre and creative than just everybody's an android or just a normal human, and there's so much weird middle ground between people who have like technologically augmented arms or brains, or their eyes are gone and replaced with little tiny beady glass eyes. All that stuff is so great. I love that trailer to death. It is a great trailer to showcase the game and just a great trailer to watch for fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I have a list of the 5 best trailers, because I only did top 5.
Yes.
I did not do top 10. I didn't think there would be enough to do a top 10, and then you did your list, and you're like, okay, there were enough for a top 10.
There were a lot of good games shown at this E3.
There really were. So I'm going to do my top 5. I also, for all of these, I have an honorable mention.
Okay.
My honorable mention that did not make it was Cyberpunk for me, because I thought it was very cool. I did not have the enthusiasm for it. You did. But I definitely respect it a lot. I do want to go back and look at it again. I have not watched it since the show.
You have to watch it. It rewards multiple viewings a lot.
Yeah. I need to watch it in like good non-streaming HD.
Exactly. So, yes.
All right. But here are my 5. And my real like breakdown on these, I'll do it on with my best games too, was just like, what was the delta between like going in, if you had told me the title before, and then after seeing trailers,
okay,
excitement level, you know?
Yeah.
So some of these, like, I knew about, some of them I didn't, so just kind of weighing it. So, rough top 5. My 5 was Tunic from the Microsoft show. A Little Mouse, Little 2.5D World.
He's a fox, not
the
mouse.
Fox, sorry.
The
mouse is in Resident Evil 2, which is also on my list. So that's what was, anyway. Little Fox, it's got a cool world, cool music, beautiful graphics, Zelda-style kind of 2D game. Very excited for this one. I had no idea about it. I know it had been announced under a different name at some point.
Yeah.
But this was effectively my introduction to it, and it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's a game I knew was in development and had kind of forgotten about, and it was very refreshing to see it. Yeah. And you're like, oh shit, right, this game looks amazing.
My number 4, which I think is the only one that wasn't on your list, is Jump Force. I loved the Jump Force trailer. You get Goku, you get Luffy, you get Naruto together. They're fighting. Frieza comes in there. This big, like, CG animated cutscene. I thought it was neat. And then at the end, Light and Ryuk were there. Like, oh, how are they going to fight? I just hope, like, Light's ability is that he can, like, reduce half his HP and then get Ryuk's eyes and write everyone's notes in his Death Note and just auto-kill everyone.
That's I hope it's just he can just automatically kill everybody because all he has to do is look up at the top right of the screen and see what their name is. And it's like, they're fucked. You know, it's Son Goku. Oh, shit. Here we go.
Yeah. All right. But I liked that trailer. I thought it was a lot of fun. Don't know how the game will turn out, but we'll see. It was just a nice surprise in the middle of the one of the more tedious stretches of the Microsoft show. It was like, oh, God, that was cool.
It did have Goku Naruto in it. So it did. Pretty good.
Number 3, Fire Emblem, 3 Houses. I was going to be excited for Fire Emblem either way. But getting a glimpse at a new full HD console Fire Emblem was so cool and so much fun, and it looked beautiful and it sounded beautiful, and I'm very, very excited. So, there you go.
Cool.
My number 2 was Resident Evil 2. If you had told me, oh, they're doing a Resident Evil 2 remake before that trailer, I would have been like, okay, cool. For whoever wants that, that's neat. And then after the trailer, I was like, I need to get that in me. That looked awesome. It looked really good. It looked very fun. It looked very scary. Very creative. The whole thing with the mouse was one of the most memorable moments of E3. So Resident Evil 2.
It's a very good trailer.
And my number 1. Keep in mind what I said about the delta between expectation and reality. Is the combined trailers for Kingdom Hearts 3. Which,
all 3 of them.
There had been ads for Kingdom Hearts 3 before E3, obviously, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's been around
plenty
for
of
a
it.
While, it turns out.
It has. But there was just something about it. I saw it 3 times at E3 this week. You talked about that. And each time, I got a little more excited for it, and I just realized, like, oh, I'm kind of actively looking forward to this game. I thought I was probably not going to play it, and now I think I probably am going to play it. And it just, the amount of, like, visual and, like, gameplay creativity going on in all those trailers is so phenomenal and vast. It really looks like something pretty special to me. And they just picked the most gibberishy storylines they could find for each of those trailers. Probably not the most, but very gibberishy storylines. They didn't try to pick something easy out of the game, like, you know, Sora and Donald, like, reuniting for the first time or something. Right. No, it was, Roxas isn't gone, he's in my heart, my kingdom heart. I don't think he said that last part, but in my mind,
like,
he
did. The line he says does use the word heart twice in the same sentence. I can never remember how the fuck you even do that.
It's bad writing, but it's glorious bad writing.
His heart is in my heart. I think that's what he says.
So, there you go. Maybe just by sheer barrage of trailers, Kingdom Hearts 3 went to the top of my list.
Yeah. I have to note that the only reason it was not on my list of top 10 trailers is because I gave it its own list.
Okay, so that's fine.
I felt it would be weird to put it on that list, too.
So let's do, like, best games, you know, deep dives into games. Although, actually, you know what? Before we do the best, so we don't end on a down note, I'm going to do my worst
list. I have two other... my other two lists will be quick, like, wrap-ups of dumb shit that happened at E3, so I wanted, like...
We'll just save all that for the end.
We'll
that's
save
fine.
That at the end.
All right, so I have 5, you have 10, so let's just do... You'll do your first 5, and then we'll go back and forth for the last.
Okay. So, so this is top 10 best. I call them game demos of E3 2018. Argue some of these are kind of trailers, but whatever.
Okay.
It was mostly, like, do they show clearly, like, in-game footage, and they kind of talk about it and sort of explain the game a bit? That was more or less, like, my definition for that.
That makes sense.
My number 10 is Assassin's Creed Odyssey. You know, we had a pretty solid look at that game at the end of Ubisoft. It had me... Like, we talked about it when we talked about the Ubisoft press conference. I have, like, very complicated feelings about it, of that I think it's so soon to do another giant Assassin's Creed game. But the setting is awesome. It looks gorgeous. I love that sort of 400 BC Peloponnesian War section. It is fucking a really cool piece of history and a great place to set Assassin's Creed. And that gameplay section, I thought that demo was well done, of showing you basically the beginning and following through of this, like, little side quest. You get a good sense of who Cassandra, the one playable protagonist, is. You meet some cool little characters. I thought they did a good job of kind of highlighting very, like, visually little additions they did to the game, like the different combat abilities you can now assign and stuff like that, that very elegantly kind of demonstrate, here's some of the new things you put in the game. Now, it looks a lot like Assassin's Creed Origins, but they have done work to distinguish it. And I thought it was if this had been the thing they showed next year and we had a year off of Assassin's Creed, I'd be so positive on it, and that's probably the main reason why it's on this list at all. But it is really well made in its own right.
Yeah.
My number 9 is the Rage 2 game demo. This is one of... If you had told me when they made that Walmart leak and before they made that Walmart leak that I would ever be in any way interested about a Rage 2 at E3 2018, I would have said, wait, there was a Rage 1? Oh, right, that id game, huh? And no, like, Rage 2, that fucking demo was really solid, and they showed, a good chunk of that game. I thought the demo was really well edited together. I liked the little, like, kind of match cuts they did on the abilities, and thought that was all really cleverly and effectively done. It showed you, again, a nice sort of, like, ebb and flow of sort of, you get the beginning of the mission, you get some of the combat stuff in the middle, then you get the little twist at the end where the big thing comes down and he gets a new ability, and then the big fight at the end that teases a fight with a boss. Like, standard demo structure, but executed very effectively, and the combat just looks a lot of fun, and I'm excited about to see more Rage 2 in the future, which is something I never would have thought I would have ever said in my life.
Exactly.
My number 8 is Skull and Bones, the pirate game. I thought that had such a strong showing at Ubisoft. It really surprised me just how much it looks like the scope of the game has expanded in the right ways. And I thought they did an... And this is one of where, like, that Skull and Bones cinematic trailer at the beginning is kind of wrapped in this as well. Because I thought that did such a good job of setting the tone of this very, like, you know, a lot of real sexy pirates betraying each other in a crazy world. That looks like a lot of fun. And then I'm a huge fan of the Assassin's Creed 4 boat stuff. I want to see more of this game. I want to see more of those ideas expanded, because it's a very unique kind of thing for video games. It's a weird coincidence that we have this and Sea of Thieves around the same time. But other than that, like, there's no games in this genre to speak of, basically. And I thought they did a really good job showcasing what that game is and what makes it interesting. My number 7 demo is Elder Scrolls Blades. It is the only mobile game on my list in any capacity. And I am legitimately really excited to see this game. Mobile phone games are things I have often on relationships with. Every once in a while, a new thing will come out and be like, oh, I'll check this out and play it a little bit on and off for a couple of days and then kind of delete it once they're clearly trying to gouge me for some money. But it is something that I like checking those out, and I think the mobile market can sometimes move in interesting directions, and that pitch for Elder Scrolls Blades is so incredibly strong and so interesting and such a much bigger, ambitious game than you would ever expect to be shown like that for a phone. And I'm really stoked to see what it is. And I think when they... the thing that tied it all together was when at the end of the demo, Todd Howard is like, and this is your town, and yes, you like build up and improve the town and restore the town over the course of you playing the game. And I was like, okay, you have slotted everything in together, because one thing I really like doing is going on missions and then going back to like my home base and having new shit in my home base from the mission I just went on.
It's a fun thing.
It's a good reward cycle for a video game to have, and I like that. And then my number six demo, this was very, though my top six were very hard for me to rank, but my number six was Death Stranding.
My honorable mention was Death Stranding, okay. So it's effectively my number six.
Yeah, it's something of where I think it is a very good, interesting, weird demo for that game, and there's some fucking cool, wacky shit in it. But at the same time, there is a certain effect of showing stuff that is actual gameplay, clearly, for Death Stranding that disappoints me, because I don't want it to be a video game. I just want it to be trailers. But then also them showing the game this many times, some of the mystery is unraveling in a way that, like, is making me more remember, right, I actually don't like almost any Hideo Kojima game I've played other than Peace Walker. Like, that's the only one I have, like, generally positive feelings for. I, like, respect Metal Gear Solid 3 and 2 quite a bit, and 1 for, like, historical stuff, but don't really like those games. And so I'm getting over the hill, because all these demos are ones I rewatched earlier today, and I watched it again with, like, audio that I, like, with better audio, and I could kind of understand what people were saying. I realized, oh, maybe this game is just way cooler and prettier to look at than it will actually be to play. And this demo, yeah, like, putting me over that hump is why it has to be a number six.
I agree, generally. I like the Metal Gear Solid games in general a lot more than you do, yeah. I think, because I like 1, 2, and 3 a ton. I don't like 4 or 5, or I've never finished Peace Walker. It was fine.
It's so good. It's the best Metal Gear Solid game before. Okay. I'm not the only person that holds that opinion.
No. Lots of people do. I should go back to it at some point. But anyway.
Those comic book cutscenes are very good.
Yes. Really, I should play it on my Vita, because I was trying to play the PS3 HD version.
Yeah.
And I think that doesn't feel right there. But yeah. Anyway.
It was a mobile game.
Let's go back to this, though. So I probably have faith that I will enjoy what Hideo Kojima does a little more than you do, maybe. But it is that inevitable. For me, though, it's not that feeling of like, oh, this is a game I'm going to go be playing. It's that compared to the other ones in my top five, I still can't imagine myself sitting down with a controller and playing this game. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would feel like. I don't know what the game cover would look like. Like, I don't know anything of those sorts of things. So, like, in terms of effectively pitching me a video game, we still don't have that. And that's okay, because I love the trailer cycle for Death Stranding. But, you know, compared to, let's say, this is not on my top five, so I'll just sit here. Compared to, like, Spider-Man.
Okay, yeah.
Spider-Man, I can very easily, like, that's a video game. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to play it, I'm going to have fun with it. I can't quite do that for Death Stranding. I should say Spider-Man is only not on here because we've seen it several times. I know it's going to be great.
Fair enough.
We didn't learn a lot new about it, necessarily. And the other five here were just more fresh.
We learned Electro's in the game. We learned Rhino's in the
game. Did you think they were going to make a Spider-Man game without Electro in it?
Yes, there are many. Spider-Man 2 does not have Electro in it.
Yeah, but this one, where they're doing all of we already knew they had a bunch of villains in the game.
Well, of course they're going to have villains, but we didn't know for sure, and we didn't know what their designs looked like, and I'm a big Spider-Man nerd, so I like that. So I'm just saying, they did show new stuff. It's just new stuff for me, not new stuff for you.
Hey, so speaking of Spider-Man, before we get to our top fives, can I get a racist check on something? I want you to tell me if this was racist. It wasn't me, it was Thomas, it was my brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was about to get incredibly awkward.
No.
Like, what? I was screaming the N-word in the street. Was that racist?
No.
Jonathan, we need to have a conversation.
Casually racist, not that kind of racist. We were watching the trailer, and we saw Electro, and Thomas said, shouldn't that be Denzel Washington? Meaning he meant Jamie Foxx, who played him in
Amazing Spider-Man 2. Yeah.
Yes. Denzel Washington and Jamie Foxx, I think, are about as different as two people could be as actors, other than the color of their skin. So that's where I need the racist check on that one.
Maybe a little. I will say, like, in sympathy, for whatever reason, Jamie Foxx is an actor I have the hardest time remembering his name. Whenever I see him in something, I'm like, what the fuck is that dude's name? I always have that effect.
He's not in that much stuff. Yeah. So
it's like when he pops up for whatever reason, I can just never remember Jamie Foxx's name. And Denzel Washington is a name and actor that is impossible to forget or disassociate those two things from. So there's maybe some wiggle room for Thomas, but he should be careful.
He
needs to reflect on himself, I think, is the step here. It's not that bad. It's just think about some things.
It's all good.
Yeah.
We're just having fun. But yes, Denzel Washington would make a great Spider-Man villain, I'm sure.
Fuck yeah.
If he wanted to.
He wouldn't be Electro, but...
Which Spider-Man villain do you think Denzel Washington would be best for?
The Tinkerer. He'd make a bunch of weird robots, but he'd be very intense about it. He'd be very intense about it.
I'm going to pick Paste Pot Pete, just to go with an old joke. Just, yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's do the top five.
Do you want to do first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
My five was Forza Horizon 4.
My five is also Forza Horizon 4, so we're going at the same time. All right.
Well, there we go. Forza Horizon 4, super effective demo. Both did, I think, a good big pitch to if you've never played Forza Horizon.
Yeah.
Here's why you could come have fun, play Forza Horizon. But also, if you have played, here are like clear improvements and new things we've done to draw you in. Specifically, the whole season cycle thing they have is so impressive. They did such a good job showing it off without taking like 4 hours to do it, you know? They did it pretty succinctly. And that is such a clear build on things they've done in past Forza and Forza Horizon games. And such a big, like, expansion of weather systems that they've done that it was impossible to come away from that and not be a little excited for the game. Whether or not, like, you own an Xbox, plan on playing it, whatever, it looked like a really cool game.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think it looks like a really strong game, and the demo was really smoothly put together. It was clear, like, what the sort of the anchor was of the seasons thing. They did a really strong job of... like showing all of that. The guy, the developer from Playground who was emceeing that little demo, did such a great job. I love that they had all the people playing that multiplayer demo on stage with each other, and they introduced all of them.
Yep.
So it like had a very friendly tone and feel to it, which was appropriate for a Horizon game. It was just a really strong, solid demo that showed off a game that looks really good.
Absolutely. My number four was Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Okay.
Of the games at E3, which one am I most excited to have in my life? Probably Smash Bros. For me personally. Was it the best demo on stage? No.
I don't even know if I, for the purposes of my list, I didn't even consider it, because I don't know if that's a demo, because there's not enough sustained gameplay footage for it to count in my mind. It's a very complicated trailer.
That's fair. It's a 25-minute, it's a trailer-a-thon. No, but, you know, so I'm balancing. They showed me a lot of what I wanted and hoped to see in my wildest dreams. The every character in the game thing is awesome. Now, did they need to actually name and in-depth describe every single one of them? Probably not. But that's okay.
No, they didn't.
I still liked it. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. I can't wait. That's my number four.
Well, my number four is Spider-Man. And I think those are good pairings, because the main reason why Spider-Man is this high is because I'm me and I like Spider-Man a lot. And that Spider-Man demo was really cool. And they had a lot of cool villains in it. And I like the designs for the villains. And Spider-Man is cool. And I like Spider-Man.
It was a genuinely good demo, too. Like, it wasn't just that we like Spider-Man. It was very technically impressive. It had a lot of variety. We got to see the fighting system. We got to see their versions of all the villains.
And it showed stuff that was different from the other demos they've showed. It wasn't more just sort of like in the open world with some quick time cutscenes. It was like a lot of fighting, a lot of like good little cutscenes that were really sharp, introducing the little villains, and it had a nice arc to it. And I always like a demo that has a good little like tease at the end for something of like, oh, who's the sixth villain of the Sinister Six? Is he the Doc Ock or Green Goblin, obviously, but I think it's Doc Ock.
All right.
What's your number three?
My number three was Fallout 76.
My number three was also Fallout 76. I think our lists are very similar, Jonathan.
I actually think our two and one might be the same.
We'll find out.
My number three was Fallout 76. Like, look, I know I'm buying Smash Bros. Ultimate. It's pre-ordered. I actually have Fallout 76 pre-ordered for the beta code. We'll see if I keep it. Yeah. But I don't know for sure if I'm going to play Fallout 76. It's coming out a very busy time of the year. I don't know if I'll feel like I have the time or energy for it. But I was really impressed by this. As I said before, there was no way I was going to play this just on the pitch of more Fallout. But looking at it here, like, this looks like such an interesting new pitch from Bethesda. It looks like an interesting new take on the Fallout universe. And the more I've thought about it, I think one of the things I'm so excited to see with this game, and something they pitched very effectively, is one of the big trends of this console generation has been this idea of online shared world games, right?
Yeah.
Like Destiny, like The Division, like the upcoming Anthem. And I think one of the things about that trend is that nobody's been able to give a succinct explanation for why that should be a thing and what is effective about it. And Todd Howard and Bethesda gave a pretty good succinct explanation of why that should be a thing and how it could be fun. One way my brother said it is that he said this is what he wishes Elder Scrolls Online had been.
Okay, yeah. Because
Elder Scrolls Online is pretty much like Warcraft in the Elder Scrolls world. What Fallout 76 is a Fallout game with other people in it.
Yeah.
And that is a really cool distinction, because that's also a distinction, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Destiny and all these games are basically MMOs that don't want to call themselves that.
Yeah.
And a lot of their problems come from trying to balance the trappings of an MMO with the trappings of a major, like, you know, third-person shooter kind of thing, right? And Fallout 76, as I said, it looks like it's a Fallout game with a lot of the stuff you would enjoy about a Fallout game, but with the added benefits of having a more unpredictable living world with people in it. That sounds cool. I think there is a potential that this could be a big revolutionary game. There's a potential also that it could maybe just not work in practice.
Yeah, it might miss the mark for sure.
But either way, this is a swing I'm really glad Bethesda is taking, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and I basically agree 100% with everything you just said. It is such a solid, like, unbelievably solid demo of showing you what the fuck this game is for a game concept that is complicated in a game genre that has been historically very difficult to package and explain in a demo like this, that is, like, very hard to even understand sometimes when you're playing the games that are in that genre, right?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, Todd Howard fucking sauntering on stage with this cool leather jacket and just throwing down this big presentation put together by that team at Bethesda of all these cool little videos that show the different aspects of how this stuff works, with so much personality and humor in there, sells so much of the pitch of this game that I was not interested in at all before, like, coming into the show based on the rumors we heard, and coming out of it, I'm with you, Jonathan. There, I think there's a decent chance that this game does not live up to, like, the best promise of what that pitch sells you, and that's something to be cautious about. It is not a game I would pre-order, and, like, for any reason other than to get the beta and then cancel the pre-order,
right?
I would wait to see, like, either play the beta, and if you really like the beta, obviously that's a good go-ahead, or wait for reviews and wait for to see how it's received. But it puts this game on my radar in a really big way, and this is a game I'm going to be paying attention to, and that is so far from my feelings on the game before that demo, that it just demonstrates how solid that demo was, especially when you had earlier that day, you had the Anthem demo, which was a similar sort of thing done in the, like, worst way possible, and it showed how those demos are very hard to do, and these kinds of things are hard to explain and package, and that just highlighted how much better Todd Howard and his team were with Fallout 76 one.
Absolutely.
So a lot is riding on this number two pick, Jonathan, of whether the top of our lists are the exact same or not.
My number two is Last of Us Part Two.
Okay, yep, there we go. Yep, it's the same.
We did not plan this at all.
No, we didn't. I didn't know that you were doing a game demo list. You didn't know. We didn't communicate about the list at all.
No, Last of Us Part Two.
Yep.
You know, if for no other reason than it had the best video game kiss in the history of the medium.
Yep.
Both for, and we didn't talk about this yesterday, but the quietly progressive, revolutionary impact of seeing as the first big thing on Sony's stage, which, given their reach, is the biggest stage at E3,
a
lesbian kiss between two characters, a character who has been established in some way as gay, and gets to continue being that, and it is just a part of who she is.
Yeah, it's not something that's, like, contained in that one, like, DLC thing that they never touched
right.
on.
Right, yeah. That alone was amazing. The acting there was amazing. The animation was stunning. The attention to detail, both visually and then verbally, in the what is said and what isn't said, and how it comes together, how humid it all feels. And then just the most intense 10 minutes of content at E3.
Yeah.
Unbelievable gameplay demo, and then all tying it back together with that theme of people should be afraid of you, meant in two very different ways. There's no doubt that Naughty Dog is going to hit a home run with this one. Like, that, this was not surprising in its quality.
Exactly, yeah.
But holy hell, it was good.
Yeah, it was so good. I watched it again earlier this morning in a really high quality video I found, and it's so, like, even watching it again, that gameplay sequence is so tense and so strong at showcasing Again, it was the stuff we talked about last night of it reminded me of everything I love about the combat and the design of the first Last of Us, and then showcasing the little extra bits of, like, you know, being going prone and going underneath that bus or whatever, and the extra little bits in the crafting menu and all the little details they put on top of the nice, like, Last of Us foundation that they have makes it a very effective gameplay demo on top of it just being this great thing to just watch and just appreciate the flow of it and the style of it and the framing with those cutscenes and then just the ebb and flow of the gameplay that they show, which is so smart. Again, it's kind of like with that Anthem Fallout 76 thing. This was something that earlier we had seen a similar kind of demo-ish thing of Shadow of the Tomb Raider done very poorly. And this is just like a, if you're sitting somebody down and saying, I'm like, how do you make a gameplay demo? This is one of the videos you show them of, like, this is a good gameplay demo. Mm-hmm. This sells somebody on this game in a way that is very effective and entertaining and just, like, gets under your skin.
It is the best Naughty Dog demo Naughty Dog has brought to E3 since the last time Naughty Dog brought a demo to E3.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it might be the best.
It might be overall.
Their best that I've seen.
The one for Uncharted 4 with the big action sequence from the middle of that game is, like, so good.
It's
as
so
a thing.
Good.
But this one's even better at pitching than...
Yeah, it doesn't have the little, like, narrative shell that this has. That makes it... This feels like almost like a little short film in its own right, you know? And the only... Like, or... I mean, you know, we'll talk about our number one game. But one of the main reasons why I was able to sort of solve the problem of two very hard games to figure out which one is a better demo is... This was more expected. Like, we know what Naughty Dog does, and like, Naughty Dog does it very well, and we know what The Last of Us is, and we know it's very good. And so it's like, my expectations for The Last of Us Part 2 were already sky high, and they met them in spades, but still, I had those expectations set.
Yes.
So what is the number one game, Jonathan?
Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle Donkey Kong Adventure DLC.
100%. The best demo of the trailer.
Rabbid Cranky Kong hanging out with Rabbid Peach.
There's the Donkey Kong a bit. I thought that was smart.
There's nothing better. Let's wrap this podcast up.
What is the actual number one, Jonathan?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Tsushima. You got the title wrong. It's just TS.
There's no... God damn it. I've been typing it wrong this whole time.
This is Tsushima.
I was testing you, Sean.
I didn't speak Japanese, so... I know I've speak Japanese.
Is it really Tsushima?
Yeah, Tsushima. And I know Japanese geography better than I know the geography of anything, which I don't know how that happened, but it was a weird topic that came up sometimes in Japanese.
Every
class
time I have typed it as Tsukushi. Where am I getting the coup from?
I don't know.
Fuck. All right. Why is Ghost of Tsushima so good, Sean?
It's just a really fucking well made demo and everything. So it has basically all the stuff that The Last of Us Part 2 trailer had in terms of, like, the ebb and flow, the good sense of, like, pacing. It's showcasing a lot of good gameplay stuff. And it has the added bonus of being something surprising and new, because the only thing we had seen from this game was that one CG trailer at Paris Week, like, 6 months ago. And that CG trailer was very good, and it was very exciting, the idea of Sucker Punch making a samurai game that is also set in, like, the 1100s during the first Mongol invasion of the island of Tsushima. Shima means island in Japanese.
I knew that part.
You can remember the last part of the name very easily that way. So it's because it's also a Japanese historical setting that isn't used very much, even in Japanese media. You usually go to, like, the Sengoku era or something like that. And so it's just an awesome fucking pitch. It was a great pitch for that game, but all we had was a cinematic trailer. And then the first time we see any gameplay of this game is a big, meaty, fucking 8-minute gameplay demo that's just uninterrupted. Just, you know, you have that cinematic at the beginning of Gene, your main character, walking out of that bamboo forest with his horse. And then you just kind of proceed from there until at the end you are dueling this lady out for revenge underneath this autumn red tree with the leaves on the ground spiraling in the wind with the sunset in the background, and you know you're standing in the foreground, she's in the background. The fucking depth, it's the best depth of field shift I've ever seen in a video game cutscene. And then you start fighting, and then the Mongols start shooting flaming arrows in, and everything's getting set on fire like Ron, and it's just holy fucking shit, it's so good.
The colors on the leaves and on the grass and in the sky.
The lighting system.
The blood.
The
animations on the sword when he just flicks the blood off or wipes it on his sleeve, puts it back in that sheath. This is such a good demo. This is almost unprecedented to me at an E3 thing where you go from, we knew about the game, sounded cool, right?
Yeah.
But we didn't know more than that. Two, this looks like an all-timer. Like, yeah. That jump from one 10-minute demo is crazy to me. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it at E3. It is nutso that this game is being made. It feels so truly, you know, next generation. Like, we are in the end stage because all the biggest stuff is coming. And just also speaks to, I'm so glad Sony has taken their runaway success with the PS4 and reinvested it in the games, because that is the smartest thing to do. And I think this, more than anything else they showed, speaks to the creativity they are allowing to flower at their studios.
Yeah, and it has, you know, there's that nice added bonus that it feels like a game tailor-made for us.
Yes, there's that too.
That's great. Like, this is a game that after we finished recording the podcast last night about the Sony conference, I just watched, like, I should have probably watched about 30 minutes of stuff and then gone to bed, and I ended up watching, like, an hour of clips on YouTube of different samurai movies, like, nice. The ending of Sanjuro, and I just, like, played that a couple of times, because it's so, if you have not seen Sanjuro, it's so good, and some Zatoichi movies, and it is just, they are so fucking, like, frame perfect with this game of replicating so much of that cinematic style, and pacing and use of color, and it is just, when I rewatched the demo earlier this morning, when I was making this list to confirm for myself, is it the Part 2 Last of Us 1, is it the Ghost of Tsushima 1, and as soon as I started the Ghost of Tsushima trailer, and it is that first shot, and it was like, I just want this painted on a wall, like, I just want this frame. And which was the exact same thing when I was watching the last fight from Zatoichi Challenged, a movie directed by Ken Miyazaki, who's a very good director, last night. And there are several shots in that fight that are like, I just need this. I need this image in me. Because that's also the great part about that fight is it is snowing, and there's such good use of snow. And maybe I hope there's a part in Ghost of Tsushima, or at least a sequel, where they maybe go to Hokkaido or something that has a lot of good snow stuff, because there's a lot of good snow stuff in samurai movies.
Oh, but
it has that thing of, like, this very deliberate pacing, very deliberate framing that suggests so much, that is so evocative of that era of Japanese film and that style of Japanese film. And to see that replicated in that way in a video game trailer and demo sequence is just amazing. And then on top of that, all the gameplay that they showed looked really exciting. The way that they're taking that kind of chanbara, very deliberate sword combat with multiple enemies and stance changes and stuff, and putting that in the game, that's so cool looking and such a good pitch for how to make that combat system stand out next to a lot of, like, you know, a Batman system or a more traditional character action system. This looks like it's very unique. Everything about that demo, from, like, the framing, the music, the aesthetics, then the gameplay stuff they showed, all of it just sold me on that game so fucking hard.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
Let's talk about some shit.
Okay. I did not make a top 10 worst games list, so
I did a top 5. I just called it worst games. You can mix this together as games that I think will be the worst ones, games that I think showed the worst here. It's a mix of those two.
Okay.
But I just, worst games, gut check.
I'm excited to hear this.
My dishonorable mention for this one is Crackdown 3.
Okay.
That game, like, we've been dancing around this. That game looks fucking awful. Everything about that game looks awful.
Yeah.
It visually looks stupid. It looks like bad gameplay.
It looks all like it's still a game that's meant to release in 2014 when it was first announced.
Absolutely.
Right?
It feels like they don't really know how to make the best use of Mr. Terry Crews. Mm-hmm. Everything about that game is going to be bad, and that's why they're taking forever to release it. Fuck that game.
Okay. Yes, all right. I agree.
Number 5. This is not a game that I necessarily think is or will be bad. It's actually already out. It's Unravel 2.
Okay, yes.
I don't
think Unravel... It is out, and I haven't heard anything about it. So.
That's maybe there's a reason for that. But the demo for this was so bad. I feel bad for the poor developer. But in any case, it went on forever. They showed 2 trailers and a 75-minute demo. I timed it. It was a full 75 minutes of 2 people who did not really know how to talk to each other, I don't think, playing Unravel 2. It was very boring. It was very bland. It was one of the nadirs of the EA show. And here's how I know this. This should be easy to make me excited in this game.
Yes, exactly.
This is the kind of game I like, and you made me hate it. What is wrong with you, EA? Your show is so bad.
Going back to some of the stuff we were talking earlier about, like, the weird lack of Switch ports, that is the one that, like, stands out the most of a game that was shown that should have had a Switch port, and nope.
So bizarre. So bizarre. Also, it's a co-op game that has no online co-op.
Yeah.
So that's weird. Number 4. is the endless barrage of bland open-world post-apocalyptic shooters.
Okay, that's more than one video game, I'd hate to tell you.
I know. And, you know, all of them are probably going to be just fine on their own, but I had to sit through way too many of these at E3 this year, so they had to get a spot on this list. One of them has been broken out later on the list, so this is complete cheating. But I just wanted to, you know, give a dishonorable mention here at number four for just over and over again, someone steps out. And the colors are very kind of sepia-tinted. And there's some dirt on the ground. And, you know, humanity isn't really there. And it's all gritty. And you got to run, oh, there's a zombie, an undead thing, and you got to kill that. Or, oh, man, that plane was crashed over there. Let's see if we can find parts in it. And you've always got a gun. And it's always first person. And it's always open world. And I'm sick and tired of it. Go away.
Okay.
Fallout 76, you can stay. Rage 2, you had color. You can stay. Other than that, all of y'all fuck off.
Yeah. But even then, like, those games made the other ones, like Metro and Dying Light 2, that did not have quite as strong of, like, an aesthetic pitch or, like, presence on stage, stand out even more as being, like, this is too much of a trend.
Yes. Number three is The Quiet Man. The most racist trailer of E3. The most nothing trailer of E3. It was half live action, half video game. It was all bad. And it's apparently an interactive movie, which should have been a dead trend in 2012. But somehow people still think that movies are the only actual form of media that is legitimate. So video games have to be movies or else they're not legitimate, which is stupid.
I would love if on the back of the box for The Quiet Man when that game comes out, it just says at the top of the box, half live action, half video game, all bad. And it's like, and it's true for both people who maybe would like the game and people who don't like it. For the people who like it, it's bad in a good way. For people who don't like it as bad in the way that bad is bad.
You are welcome to use that as the critic quote on your box, Square Enix.
Yeah, it would be very good.
Number two was Command & Conquer Mobile.
Yes. Because that's not even the name of the game, I don't think.
I don't know what it's actually called. It's a Command & Conquer Mobile game.
& Conquer Rivals is the name of the game.
It doesn't matter. It was the worst demo of E3, maybe. It went on and on and on and on with shoutcasting. They told us nothing about what the game actually was, so everything we were looking at was completely indecipherable.
Yep.
And they were trying to hype us up for nothing. And then, if you are a Command & Conquer fan, which I'm not, but I can at least put myself in these shoes, you just got that kick in the balls at the end of this is what they're doing with your series you love.
I saw some people that were very unhappy with the direction that EA is taking that property. Understandable reasons.
As a Metroid fan who lived through Federation Force.
Exactly, yes.
But that's nowhere near this bad. No, it would be like if they turned Metro into a pachinko game on your phone.
Yeah.
Konami had Metroid. Yeah. Anyway.
It'll happen one day.
Number one is The Division 2, because The Division 2 just looks horrible. And we had to sit through two long, horrible demos for this game.
Because on both of the stages it showed up, it was one of the longest things they showed.
And it was bad both times, and it looks bland. It's part of that endless barrage of bland open-world post-apocalyptic shooters. I hate it. And I also, like, does it frustrate you how completely unwilling the game press is to engage with the weird politics of The Division?
There are some pockets of people. So it's like, although it's mostly like people at Waypoint and freelancers that usually write for Waypoint on Twitter.
You know?
But it's like, yeah, it's the mainstream, like, you know, Polygon is not writing a bunch of stories about it.
And
IGN and GameSpot certainly aren't.
Yeah, and there were so many just like tweets and stories people like, I like how they've like changed up the shooting and like this system and this. Like, yeah, but it's rancid. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't, like, that is worth focusing on. This does not exist in a vacuum. I hate that there's just a general unwillingness to engage with some of those things with The Division and just kind of let it slide, because that's just weird for an industry that should be celebrating more progressive things than this. So, fuck you, The Division. I hope I never have to see you again. I hope The Division 2 flops and there's no Division 3 and then you're not at E3 next year. Go away.
Yeah. No, I agree with all of that. And so I did not make a worst games list. Instead, I made two lists.
Okay.
One is for a worst thing and one is for a best thing. I'm going to start with the worst and then can end on a good note. I made a list that is the top 10 best worst stuff at E3 2018. Originally my idea for this list was there was going to be a best worst stuff and a worst worst stuff, and the worst worst stuff was going to be the stuff that is like actually bad, and the best worst stuff is the stuff that's like, this is bad for E3 but is very funny. And I couldn't come up with enough to do both as a list that is like, I'm just going to rank those two concepts that are like impossible to put together. So don't put much stock in like how this list is ranked. It means nothing how it's ranked. It's mostly ranked so that the thing that I thought was funniest was at the top because I wanted to end it on something that's funny. So
honorable mention or dishonorable mention or whatever goes to the 10,000 featured changes for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. That, you know, that squeaked in there at the end, and it was it that fucking Smash Bros. Demo was a lot. And,
it was.
And when he ended it with, and we have made 10,000 other changes, it's like, okay, I believe you.
You just listed all of them.
Yeah, that's true of, like, every fucking video game sequel ever. You don't need to do that. So that didn't quite make the list, but I want to just point out, it was fucking weird. My number 10 is the Command & Conquer Rivals game Shoutcast demo. What the fuck are you doing? It was mercifully the only Shoutcast demo at this year's E3. Yes. I think there were two last year's E3. At least one was on Microsoft stage. I'm pretty sure there was one also on EA stage for like a Madden thing or something. Don't do live esports Shoutcasts on your E3 press conference. It doubly don't do it if it's for an unreleased game that nobody has any fucking clue about, because you literally can't do it because it means nothing to the people watching. That was terrible. Never do that again. Number 9 is they're making a Gears of War Funko Pop game. That's fucking stupid. That is bad. They shouldn't do that. And the Gears of War brand is apparently going in the toilet if they're that desperate that they're doing a fucking Funko Pop game. My number 8 is Sony's pre-show invading the show. Why? If you had like 20 minutes to talk about other random bullshit and show some trailers, why didn't you either put good trailers in there instead of Call of Duty DLC trailers, or have some developers talking about their video games that you just showed? Don't do that again. Usually Sony has such a smooth, interesting conference, and this year it was such a bizarre big hitch. I hope that Sony sort of like figures out how to maybe do some of those ideas and do them better next year. Number 7 is EA doesn't know how to talk about Anthem. I have no idea if Anthem's going to be a good game or a bad game, but they sure shit have no idea how to show it to people. That demo, as you talked about it already, that demo is so fucking bad. It made all the worse by how much better all the stuff at Bethesda was at doing those kinds of concepts. The EA needs to get their shit together on Anthem, or that game is going to be in a tough spot. And BioWare is not going to exist this time next year, which will be very sad.
It is.
Number 6 is, hey, what was with that Quiet Man thing? They made a racist trailer for a video game that makes no sense. You just talked about it. I agree with everything that you said. Fucking, what the fuck is that game? What the fuck? Number 5, shut the fuck up about The Division 2.
Enough said.
Number 4, Ubisoft labor exploitation presented by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That was one of the sketchiest things I've seen on an E3 press conference ever. And then immediately it is like this intense online debate of a bunch of people who have taken classes and thought about and dealt with like labor issues and the concept of labor issues in their life, having to explain to people the concept of spec work and that kind of shit that this thing is. Whatever the fuck, I forget what the company is, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt's
Hit record.
Like, that stuff, it's a complicated, weird issue, and it feels real gross, but there are a lot of people that are very happy to say, like, well, I will just make a cool thing and let this company exploit me and make money off of it. And it's like, you shouldn't do that for a whole host of reasons.
I want someone to mock up the key art for Ubisoft labor exploitation presented by
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's the hot new TV show.
Yes.
Yeah, made by Ubisoft. My number 3 was, why did Square Enix show up this year?
Yeah.
I think that's enough. Just like, what the fuck? And on top of that, there should be an addendum to that. Why did Square Enix show up this year? And why didn't you bring any of the video games that we know you're making? Because we know they have more to show, and they just didn't show any of it. And it was very confusing. Number 2, Ubisoft doesn't know how microphones work.
Yes.
What the fuck? I know for most people that's not a big deal. For me, it just was brutal making through that stuff in Ubisoft. At the beginning of end of every fucking section, there was some weird goof with the mics and you could hear people talking backstage, and I hated that and I couldn't deal with it. My number 1 best worst thing that happened at E3 this year was Vince Zampella announcing Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order in a fugue state.
Yes.
That is one that's going to live in the annals of history, like when Aisha Tyler interviewed a professional cosplayer by accident at the Ubisoft press conference several years ago and didn't realize he was a guy who was paid by Ubisoft to be in that stage and thought he was just a guy that liked Assassin's Creed, so he's dressed up as it. And go back and watch that sequence, and it is super awkward. And I'm just happy to have, every E3 has had to have at least one of these. Like in 2016, when we had Jamie Foxx, who was high at EA's press conference before they did all the fucking Battlefield 1 shit. All that's so good. This will live forever for me, and I love it to death. And that's why it's my number 1, because I will never forget it.
Yes.
Now then, I think to close out this podcast, my last list is the reflection of that, is my top 10 best stuff of E3 2018. Honorable mention goes to one Mr. Elijah Wood. I like him.
Just the existence of Elijah Wood.
Just Elijah Wood. Like, he's there. He's cool. I like him. You know, he broke in the middle of that conference, and he just rolled right through it after just a deadpan, no, into the camera. And anybody else at that, and I wouldn't have been able to take it. It would have been too embarrassing and cringe and awkward, and, like, everything would have unraveled. And he just fucking rolled with it, and it was amazing. I've never seen something like that pulled off so smoothly.
He is a consummate professional, 100%. Mr. Elijah Wood
he
is.
He just got right back on track after that, as if nothing happened. And it was perfect.
It's like he rebooted. He just like...
It absolutely is. He fucking put on the VR helmet. It's like, okay, it's all fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my honorable mention. Number 10 was the German woman's soliloquy on the horrors of loneliness.
That should be higher. Yeah, it was so good.
The Sea of Solitude. I have a hard... There was a lot of good best stuff at this year's E3. And this, again, this is a mix of, like, legitimately good stuff and good stuff that I thought was, like, very funny that they did it. But in a way that was good. So the rankings is kind of meaningless, but...
The German lady... Perfectly threads that needle.
Yes,
though.
It was good. I like that demo. It was very earnest, and she was cool. Number 9 is Ubisoft's Dancing Panda.
Dancing Panda!
Dancing Panda is very good.
Love the Dancing Panda. They should
keep the Dancing Panda for next year. Ubisoft keeping streak going. Next up was the Trials Rising Game Director's Motorcycle Adventure and subsequent pratfall.
That was great.
I want that dude on E3 again next year. He fucking... It was goofy as hell, but he fucking sold it. Number 7 was Keith David calling Nier Automata a masterpiece.
One thing from the Square Enix show made it.
That originally it was just Keith David, and then I wanted to get more specific, so that's why I went for it. And just, you know, if Square Enix wants to do this again and bring video games next time, keep Keith David. It was the one thing that worked. Number 6 was Grant Kirkhope and the Critical Hits live orchestration of the Donkey Kong trailer. You already talked about it with your excellent list. I don't need to go into more detail, but very good. I like seeing Grant Kirkhope because he's a good composer.
Yes.
Number 5 was Miyamoto and Yves Guillemot's second date at the Ubisoft press conference. I want this going, whether or not they have anything worth actually announcing of a Ubisoft-Nintendo partnership, which they kind of didn't this time. It was just like a, like, weird Star Fox thing in the whatever the fuck the name is, Starlink Battle of Atlas or whatever.
Yep. Next year, it's just going to be, we don't have any Nintendo stuff this year, but my friend Miyamoto-san is in the audience, and they're going to get up and they're going to hug for an uncomfortably long time.
Yes.
And then it's going to cut to black.
Yes, and each time they do this every year, it just gets slightly more intimate, because this is the second time we've done it. I just love it. Number 4 is Microsoft is making some moves. So this is like just a legitimate, like, fucking Microsoft is doing some shit. Like I just have to commend them for making a press conference that was good, because I did not expect that at all. And then buying up some studios, making a new studio, like being, like, confident in a way that is, like, more convincing. Fucking Microsoft was doing some shit this year, and I was impressed. Good on you, Phil Spencer. Number 3 was Todd Howard's stand-up special.
Yes.
So good. Like, in that is also the Keegan-Michael Key video is attached to that one. Just Todd Howard can fucking pull it. He's never been that fucking suave and smooth at one of these before. It's just, I loved that. I loved him talking about weird E3 insider bullshit as, like, a comedy special for 10 minutes in his presentation.
The other title for this entry is Todd Howard Finds His Mojo.
Yeah, he finds his mojo. That's a good way to put it. Number 2 is Todd Howard can't stop announcing video games.
Yes.
Because it went over that whole hill of at first it's like, okay, this is getting too much. And then it's like, this is fucking amazing. Because he announced and, like, did, like, all the Fallout 76 stuff. Then he talked about they're doing all the ports for Fallout Shelter. Then he talked about Elder Scrolls Blades. And that's where it started being like, this is a bit much, but also kind of impressive. And then he announced Starfield. And then he just couldn't be stopped. So he announced Elder Scrolls 6 too. It's just like, he just fucking went out there and announced, like, 6 fucking video games.
It really, I think, was probably the most just... owning E3 moment I've ever seen of just, I can't stop! Let's announce some video games!
Let's just go for it.
Triple encore!
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a great, amazing way to end that press conference, and I just love Todd Howard.
There's a moment in The Simpsons once where Bart and his friends go on a road trip, and they wind up in Vegas, and I forget who they're watching. It's like Frank Sinatra's son or something on stage, and... the bully is in the... what's the bully's name in...
It's been a long time since I watched the Simpsons.
This is off the cuff, so I'm having trouble remembering the name. The ha-ha guy.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
But he's in the front row, and Bart is super bored, and he goes, "Man, I thought he wasn't going to play Moon River, but then, bam, third encore!" Yeah. And that's what this was for Elder Scrolls 6. "I thought they weren't going to announce Elder Scrolls 6, but then, bam, third encore!"
Yeah.
It's great.
It's really good. It was a great moment. Yeah, I loved it. But of course, my number one has to be a multiple Academy Award winning composer, Gustavo Santaolalla, opening the Sony press conference in a hoodie, playing a banjo on a metal folding chair.
Yes, that's pretty great.
just fucking, I bet there are a bunch of people that were not into that at all, but I was so into that shit, just like in this shitty, weird tent thing made up to look like that Last of Us 2 environment, and he's there with his hood up and a fucking banjo, and he just fucking solos out like a version of the main theme of The Last of Us, and with like a little bit of extra like digital accompaniment in the background on a goddamn banjo.
It's pretty good.
It was pretty fucking good. It was a good way to open that show. It was a good way to remember that video games are ridiculous, and that's why I love E3, is for that ridiculous shit. Both the bad ridiculous shit like Vince Zampella, and the good ridiculous shit like Todd Howard and Gustavo Santaolalla. The E3 is a lot of fun, but Jesus Christ, Jonathan, it is exhausting.
It is. This has been a good one, though. That was fun. A lot of lists. I think we're done. We've done like 8 hours of podcast content this week.
Yep. This was our Persona 5 of this year.
This is our Persona 5 of this year. I'm not cutting these all together into one episode, but maybe I should. In any case, we will be back next week with something not E3 related.
Yeah.
Probably going to talk about a movie. We'll see.
We'll do something.
We'll do something. Actually, you know what? Incredibles 2 comes out on Friday. We're going to be talking about that.
Sure. Some other stuff. I'll we'll try see. To see that. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I need to hibernate for a little bit. E3, it's a lot.